Welcome to the Fantastic Four, proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. This is the podcast that combines comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. I am your host, Brett Young. And even though it's not 5 years later, I'm joined by my very first returning guest, Dr. Ange. Ange, welcome back to the Fantastic Lounge. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. My Providence College basketball team stunk this year. The Patriots lost in the Super Bowl. The Americans won gold in both hockeys, so I can't complain.
Yeah, that was really great. That was really great. That was fun to watch. So for full disclosure, we are recording this the day after St. Patrick's Day. So, which is always a great time to drink. So how was, now you're in the Boston area, so you know St. Patrick's Day is a big deal. How was your St. Patrick's Day, or have you had like a what was your best St. Patrick's Day in Boston?
Yeah, I'll tell you that. Like by the time I got up here to Boston, I was a little bit too old for like let's go out. There is a huge St. Patrick's Day parade here. It is a gigantic thing. Obviously, I'm Italian, so like I'm like the big holiday is St. Joseph's Day on the 19th, where you have pastries. That's what the Italians celebrate. But I can tell you that in college, of course, St. Patrick's Day was dollar drafts of green beer in the local watering hole. Plenty of good times there.
Very good. Very good. All right. Okay. Well, let's get on with the show. Sometime ahead of recording each podcast, I ask my guests two things: choose an alcohol, beverage, or ingredient that they enjoy, and choose a comic book character they love. Now, based on the answers, I come up with a cocktail for us to create and choose a comic book to discuss. So, Ange, please tell all our friends in the lounge your chosen beverage and comic book character. Let's start with your character.
Well, I'm a huge Legion of Superheroes fan, and it's probably a little bit of a cheat. But the character is actually characters, and we're going to talk about the 5 year later Legion of Superheroes.
Very nice. Now, why did you choose those?
Well, I'll say
I'll sit back and relax for a few minutes. Take it away, Ange.
I'll talk for a little bit. The Legion has really always been part of my comic DNA. I consider Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes number 211 is kind of like my first comic book. It's probably apocryphal, but I was an early reader. My parents threw comic books at me because I was an early reader. They wanted me to read. And many of those comic books were bought at yard sales in the summer when my parents were trying to furnish a beach cottage that they had bought for the cheap. So we would go to yard sales every weekend, and at yard sales back then, there would be stacks of comics that would be like five for a quarter. Wow. And this was probably like 1977. These were all comic books from like 5 years earlier, people cleaning out their basement. So I was reading like 1973, 74, 75, Legion of Superheroes, the Grell era, which really was like the first team that I fell in love with. And basically I've read the Legion all of my life, read like the Levitz runs, read all of them. And so we'll jump to 5YL, and I think it's really one of the most polarizing runs of the Legion. I think there are people who just don't like it, and then I think the people who like it, like, love it. And I am in the love it category. I just think, you know, it was the late 80s, early 90s. Comics were getting a little bit darker. You saw the first cover. It was like dark purple and grimy. I was like, this is going to be like a darkening of the Legion. And then Giffen and the Beer Bombs really do this like great sort of left-hand turn where it's like, yeah, the universe is really dark, but the Legion isn't going to be more like the universe. The universe has to be more like the Legion. And we're going to show how the universe needs the Legion to sort of be that bright light. And you just get there. And this issue in particular is like the culmination of that first arc. When the team gets together, I get goosebumps every time I read it. It's a tough run. 9-panel grids, no code names, deep dives into history. They reboot the universe in issue 4. They re-reboot the universe in issue 5. Yeah. It's like, it's not easy, but maybe it's because of that, that I just think it's an absolute masterpiece. So anytime I could talk about the 5YL Legion, I will. Yeah. And when you asked me, I said, how about this issue in particular?
Very good. Well, I have a lot of thoughts on these things. I have the whole run, but I want to save it. Otherwise, just like I was telling you before, this podcast is going to be like 5 hours long. So I'm going to kind of save it till we're talking about the comic. I will say one thing. It's ironic that 211 was your first comic, considering
Yeah.
that this is the end of the rock. That is a story that features Element Lad facing confronting Roxas, who destroyed his planet. And here we kind of come full circle with Roxas, like however
Yeah.
many years later. So
Yeah.
that's pretty cool. That's pretty
Yeah.
cool.
Imagine being 7 years old and reading 211, where Element Lad is like, I'm going to shoot Roxas to death. And then Roxas is like, please do it. I'm so guilty. It's like, boy, I don't know if at seven I should have been reading that, but it was great.
That was a heavy way to start. That was a heavy way to start. That's absolutely true. So yeah, and like I said, I'm very conflicted on this one. So I like I said, I don't want to get bogged down too early. I'll talk about that when we get to the actual issue. So real quick, Legion of Superheroes, their first appearance was Adventure Comics, excuse me, Adventure Comics, issue 247 from April of 1958. First appearance of the 5YL version of the Legion of Superheroes was Legion of Superheroes Volume 4, Issue 1 from November 1989. The Legion was created by Otto Binder and Al Plastino. So we'll get back to the Legion very soon. So in the meantime, tell us your beverage of choice.
Well, I chose Fireball, and there are a couple of reasons. First of all, Sunboy is an absolute a-hole in this book, so
Yes,
why
he
not
is.
something named Fireball? We find out in this issue, actually, there's a character called Furball that turns out to be Timberwolf, so maybe Furball is sort of like Fireball. But really, I love the idea of a drink that was called 5 beers later for the 5 years later. And as you know, I'm not a big drinker, but back in the day when, I bent my elbow in college, it was usually about 5 beers in that somebody would say, like, we should do something else, like a shot of Jaeger or tequila or something like Fireball. So I said, why not? 5 beers later, let's do Fireball.
Absolutely. Yeah, this so Ange came to me and said, we had the name before anything. It was just like a Silver Age comic where they make the cover and they're like, okay, base a story around this. You had the name and it was so perfect. 5 beers later, I was like, okay, we have to work back from there. So that was great. I think I had a couple different ideas, and it was like, of course, Fireball. It's perfect. We'll do a shooter with that. So yes, I'm very excited about that. Now, we are doing something a little different this time. So instead of a regular cocktail, we're going to do what is called a shooter or shot. Now, this is a drink you consume all at once in one gulp, and always leads to better clarity and decision making in your life as well. So just keep that in mind, kids. But before we go over our Fireball shooter recipe, let's talk a little bit more about the vessel that shots are normally provided in a segment I like to call Secret Origins. Now, Ange, I don't have to explain that to you because you've already been on the show, so of course you get the brilliance of the pun. So we can
Yeah,
just,
I see what you did there. And in fact, I think you should do it every episode.
thanks. I'll keep that in mind. So here we go. The origin of the shot glass. Now, thank you to a bar above.com and highlandboundary.com for research and the quotes. In the 1800s, tiny glass receptacles were used for holding whiskey. Many of these early versions had very thin glass. The thicker glass models that we see today weren't common until a few years after the Great Depression ended and commercial manufacturing took off once more. As such, it is hard to find a shot glass from before the 1940s. If you have one, hold on to it because they can be quite valuable. As far as historians can tell, the earliest written reference to a shot glass came in 1913 in a book titled A History of Cass County, Indiana, from its earliest settlement to the present time. Sure, that's a real page turner. The book depicts a story from roughly 1857 in which townspeople protested the opening of a saloon. When the saloon owner received his first whiskey barrel, an angry townsperson shot a hole in it. In the words of the book's author, Dr. Jehu Z. Powell, quote, "The remedy was effectual, and the saloon was not opened. And ever after, when the boys wanted a drink, they would ask for a shot of red eye," end quote. While this origin seems likely for the name, there are plenty of other theories. The most well-known theory goes that the word shot originated in saloons where a bullet would be traded for a shot of alcohol by cash-strapped locals. However, this is most likely false. One, the word shot dates back much further than the Old West. And two, at the time, the price of a shot of whiskey in comparison to the price of a bullet did not correlate at all. you would have had to trade close to 10 bullets for one shot of whiskey. And it's likely we'll never know exactly where the name came from, but it's always fun to speculate. Now, one other note, a shot is usually 1 to 1.5 ounces of a straight liquor, like whiskey or Grand Marnier. A shooter is a mixed cocktail served in a shot glass or smaller glass and is usually 2 to 4 ounces, like something like a B-52 or a kamikaze, or what we're making today, which leads us to happy hour. So, Ange, let's make a drink. You've already coined this name 5 beers later. So tell our friends what we need.
All right, for ingredients, you'll need 1 ounce of Fireball, a half an ounce of white rum, one squeeze from a lemon wedge, and 2 dashes of Tabasco. And then to make that, you'll fill a shaker with ice. You'll add all the ingredients into the shaker, shake well, strain into a shot glass, throw it down, and then get ready to have another or another beer right behind it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So listen, Ange and I are going to throw down a couple 5 beers later as I discuss the heroic of Nick Foles until he's ready to throw a whiskey bottle at me. Everyone in the lounge is welcome to drink along and listen to this promo break.
Attention, attention, all personnel. New from the Fire and Water Podcast Network, it's MASHcast. Hosted by MASH mega fan Rob Kelly and a rotating cast of VIPs, MASHcast analyzes, episode by episode, the greatest television series of all time, MASH. Find MASHcast on fireandwaterpodcast.com.
And we are back. Ange and I have agreed that Super Bowl 52 was the greatest Super Bowl of all time, and Dr. J is way better than Larry Bird. We have agreed not to debate this any further. So there you go. Anyway, now that we've had a chance to taste our 5 beers later, Ange, what'd you think?
Well, I'll tell you, it was about as sweet as Super Bowl 39.
Oh, okay.
It was real easy. And it didn't make me feel like I needed to vomit in my mouth like Donovan
Oh,
McNabb did at the end of that game. But
Touche, my friend, touche.
to get away from sports, I'll say I think the rum added to the Fireball and the Tabasco kind of like evens it out a little bit. I do like things spicy. I put Tabasco on eggs and home fries all the time, so it was quite refreshing, kind of a little bit of a wake up. So good job.
I was in full disclosure, I did not try this shot until tonight. And I'm like, okay, well, let's run with this because there were all kind of factors that I thought would work pretty well together and complement each other with the citrus and some heat from the Tabasco and the kind of cinnamony bite of the Fireball. And then the rum would kind of even things out, bring everything all together. There's a little sweetness in the rum, bring everything together. And it worked really well. And it does have it has a nice burn at the end, kind of keeps you warm. It's nice. So this would be something that would be good 5 beers later. This
Yeah.
absolutely would. I agree. I could see us I could see us hanging out around like, I don't know, at this point, maybe 11 o'clock. Somewhere hanging out at the bar and after we've had our fourth I don't know. Well, let me ask you actually, when you would have 5 beers, what kind of beer do you like, or what kind of beer do you enjoy?
If you ask me now, it's
Right.
usually darker stuff. I'm not an
Okay.
IPA sort of person at all. So
Right.
lagers, stouts, porters more likely. It's obviously you can't five stouts later, they're rolling you down the hill, but lagers go down nice and easy.
Yes, they do.
Back when I'm thinking about this, it was more like, what do you have on draft? That's a dollar. That's what I'm drinking. And when we did things in like the dorm room or the apartment, it was often we were the classy place because we served Rolling Rock and not.
That is a New England thing. Rolling Rock is a New England thing. I had a buddy in college who was from Connecticut, and he would always be that. He thought he was being a beer snob because he's like, "Oh, I always get Rolling Rock, for myself." I'm like, "Hey,
Well, that was
what
it.
are
You
you
would go to these
doing?"
parties, everybody had Bud or Bud Light, and we were like, well, when you come to us, we're a step above Rolling Rock.
There you go. There you go. I was in a fraternity in college. My college was in Maryland, but it was about 40 minutes from the Pennsylvania border. So you cross over the Pennsylvania border and you're near an area called Hanover, and there was a packed store, like a beer store right across the, because at the time, and it might still be the case, you couldn't buy beer like in a grocery store or anything in Pennsylvania. You had to go to specifically a beer store, you had like a beer and wine store. Okay, so we would take, one of the guys had a pickup truck. We would go across the border and we go to this place and we buy this beer called Goebel's. It was like Goebles or something like that. And it was $4.99 a case. So we would load up the pickup truck with this stuff. And then when we served it, we put a little sign, we take one of the case and hang it up, and we would pronounce it Jobels as if it was like a French ale. So that's what we would serve. If we didn't have kegs and we were going with cans of beer, that's what we would serve. So.
I'll tell you what we did was we one time went to like BJ's, which is like a Costco, and we didn't bring any bags or anything. And we had this huge shopping cart filled with stuff, and my buddy had a van, not a minivan, like a van. And we just threw the shopping cart in the back of the van. And then when we had parties, we would line the shopping cart with garbage bags and fill it with ice, and then just stuff beer in the shopping cart.
Oh,
And then
really?
we'd roll the shopping cart around the party, which was like, that's how we did. So, good
That's
times.
brilliant. That is so brilliant. I love that. That's awesome. we could talk these stories all night, but we should probably get to the matter at hand. So while we are throwing down some five beers later in the Fantasta Lounge, how about some fine literature? The comic we will be discussing that involves the Legion of Superheroes is Legion of Superheroes, Volume 4, Issue 12. Publisher DC Comics, cover date October 1990, on sale date August 14th, 1990, cover price $1.75. Plotter and penciler Keith Giffen, scripter Tom and Mary Beerbohm, inker Al Gordon, letterer Todd Klein, colorist Tom J. McCraw, and cover art is by Keith Giffen, Al Gordon. Thank you, Mike's Amazing World of Comics, for the information. So, Ange, would you like to tell our friends in lounge what this story is all about?
All right, the assassin Roxas has been hired by the Dominators to execute the Legion before the team can reform, and he's killed Block to show he means business. The Legion is holed up on Wyneth, where Roxas has grievously injured Chameleon Boy and Celeste Rockfish. He even seems to have killed Ultra Boy, although only after Joe has pounded him viciously. Luckily, Cam recovers from his wounds, and Celeste manifests Green Lantern energy to heal herself. Meanwhile, Rock Kryn sends out a Legion mission team of Ayla Rand, Shrinking Violet, and Jan Arryh, or Element Lad, to stop Roxas. The mission team finds a battered and dying Roxas, and rather than kill him, they bring him to justice. Roxas's ties to the Earth government and the Dominators are revealed. Just like that, the Legion is back, and Rock even puts on a snazzy new uniform. In an epilogue, we meet a new character, former Legionnaire Kent Shakespeare, as he battles an old Legion villain, the Persuader, on the quarantine satellite orbiting Earth.
We are going to talk a lot about this, but before we get into it, I just wanted to ask, what did you think of the cover?
I think when you think about where we are in this run and this issue, and that this is really the culmination of the first arc where the Legion comes together, it's very simple but effective. It is just the Legion L, the Legion symbol, smack dab there in the middle of the cover, huge. And then you can make out the shadow of teammates that are pretty obvious if you know what you're looking for. So there's like a Chameleon Boy shadow, there's Furball shadow, there's Joe's shadow because you see the ponytail, and it
Ponytail,
just
yes.
says, yeah, it just says Rebirth underneath it. And it's all on like really what has like come to be the aesthetic of this book, which is like grimy, weather-beaten, peeling metal wall, right? So it's like the Legion is back. I just think it's perfect for what happens in this book.
Yeah, I think it works well too. Like you said, the title kind of says it all. Rebirth, big at the bottom. You have the Legion of Superheroes title at the top, the big L in the middle, and that's all you need. It's funny. I probably read this about five different times before I ever noticed the shadows of that were actually of characters, as opposed to it was just sort of a shading thing. And I was like, oh, of course, because you're right. You see Chameleon Boy right there. He's the obvious one,
Yeah.
obviously. So, all right, well, very good. Yeah, it doesn't take much to talk about the cover. It's pretty simple. But so we go right into it. And again, this era of the Legion of Superheroes followed pretty strictly the nine panel grid throughout, page by page by page, to begin this series. So we start with we're on. So you pronounced it Wyneth. Is that what you said, or Wyneth? I always pronounced it Wyneth. But maybe
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I think I probably changed, to be honest with you. I've heard it mostly as Winneth, and so I think
Okay.
that's fine.
Okay. All
Cool.
right. Well, whatever we want to call it. So it's the original home planet of Lightning Lad and Lightning Lass and Mectorans, their brother and everything. So, and they more or less are farmers on here, or own a big plantation, I guess, for lack of a better
Yeah.
term. Where they're farming, I don't know. Does it ever say exactly what they're farming? They just farm stuff. It's
Yeah,
just a
I don't
big
know.
area. Yeah, okay. So all that's missing is Lightning Lad sitting on the porch sipping lemonade in a rocking chair. And it's, anyway, so they have a big med bay. And Brainiac 5, we cut right to Brainiac 5, who is tending to Celeste Rockfish. Now, would you like to tell everybody in the lounge who Celeste Rockfish is, because this is a new character to the Legion. She is not
Yeah.
in other
Yeah. So
incarnations of it. Yeah.
she's a new character. She is a private detective that is sort of trying to help figure out exactly what's going on in terms of the Dominators running the Earth and tracking sort of Roxas, and is as a result of that is kind of like chummed around with and tagged along with the Legion. The name Rockfish, believe it or not, was Giffen's nod to Jim Rockford of the Rockford Files, which is why
Right.
she's a detective. And
Right.
we don't think she has any powers. And we'll obviously come across a little bit something later on. But
Yeah.
she turns out to be related to the Macaulay family, which is a big sort of like rich rival family of RJ Brand in Legion history. And she's changed her name to sort of dissociate herself from that.
Right. And then we cut right to so that's the first base. Then we cut right to Rock Kryn, who was Cosmic Boy. He was basically going
Yeah.
by his first name, and he'd lost his basically when the series began, he had lost his powers. He had lost his powers in a war basically between his home planet of
Yeah, Brawl.
Brawl and Shrinking Violet's planet of Imsk. They were
Correct.
basically in a deadly war for years. Both of the Legionnaires served in this war, and somehow I forget. Do they ever? I guess that yes. In the one issue, they do explain how, but he lost his powers along the way. Right? So,
Yeah, in one
right.
issue they go over that event. Venado Bay is what
That's
it's
right.
called.
That's right.
And then
Yes.
there's a great moment where the two confront each other and basically like cry and hug each other,
Right.
realizing that like, it wasn't their war.
Right.
And obviously they're friends.
Right. So he's talking to Chameleon Boy, who at the point is in a completely covered in a shroud, familiar with Durla, Cam's original home planet, where a lot of them would wear these shrouds because I guess in ways they're sort of formless, even though Cam sort of had a base humanoid shape he would take with
Yeah.
an orange shape with antennas, but it more or less looked like a human.
I'll tell you,
Durla, yeah. So go ahead. Go ahead.
that first page we see Celeste Rockfish covered in bruises,
Right.
like she's dying basically. Like
Yeah.
Brainiac 5 on that first page is like, I can't, like, I've never learned how to deal with death. And then we see Cam in this hood, and that's because in the issue where Celeste gets beaten up like that, he gets shot in the head
Right.
by Roxas, and we
Right.
assume he's dead. Like it's like bam, right to the forehead.
Right.
And so I think part of this was we don't know what's underneath that hood.
Right,
Like,
right,
is
right.
half his head gone? Is he bandaged or something like that?
Right.
So, but it does go along with that, like Legion L period E period, like that team where the Durlans all wore that and had tentacles sticking out of that sort of cowl.
Yes, yeah. So, and he put together a team. They're trying to get Roxas. They're trying to end this thing. That Roxas, again, he was the man who destroyed. He basically murdered every single member, person on Jan Arrow's Element Lad's planet. making him the sole survivor. He has been employed by EarthGov, who is now controlled by the Dominators, and he's been to assassinate any remaining Legionnaires. And like you mentioned in your synopsis, he's already killed Block. And spoilers, by the way, if anyone's picking this up, we're going to spoil a lot of this series, so there's no way not to. So just if you haven't read this yet and want to, pause this right now, take a shot of five beers later, go read the first 12 issues, and then come back to us so you can talk some more. But anyway, so he's putting together a team. He put together I'm just going to use their code names because it's easier to for people who don't know their real names. But he's put together Shrinking Violet, Element Lad, and Lightning Lass to go hunt Roxas down, because they at this point they know he's on Gwynneth, correct?
Yeah,
They know at this
he's
point.
attacked
Oh,
them.
of course, because he already attacked. Yes. So they know he's here, and they want to go on the offensive. They want to go get him, hunt him down. So then we get some callback. Celeste is thinking back to her past a little bit, and this green light, which has shown up in past issues, is coming closer and closer, and now is in the med bay with her. So at the point now, maybe you'd like to explain these two other characters who show up. This is Devlin and Kono. Would you like to explain them? Because again, there's a lot of new people in this series, and these two people show up and are part of this as well. So who is Kono?
So Kono, you'll tell by her and like wave your nerd flag high. Like if you're a Legion fan, like one of the things you love about the Legion is that you know every goddamn thing about it, right? So like
Right.
she is from the planet Sklar, and you can tell by her yellow skin and her sort of like multicolored pastel hair. She has the power to basically she can phase herself, but she also can phase things. So she has powers that way. And she
Similar to
hung
like
out
Kitty Pride, basically, kind of
similar
similar
to
to
like
Kitty
Kitty
Pride.
Pryde herself, but
Yes.
also that she can make things intangible and have them like go through the
Okay.
floor if she wants
Gotcha.
to.
Okay.
She hung out with Ultra Boy on Rimbor before they were recruited for this new Legion. So she's like, and we find out she has a traumatic backstory, but she's quite flippant in this book, and it's kind of like a little bit of a comic relief. As is this guy Devlin Orion, who is just a human and a reporter who is like following this team around to sort of get a story. Ultimately, he ends up gaining powers and becomes a version of Reflecto, where he can like deflect powers, but
Right.
not yet. Here, he's still just sort of
Right.
comic relief.
He's almost a little like a Jimmy Olsen type of
Yes,
character.
exactly.
So yeah, so the green, they are nearby. This green light shows up. They don't know what's going on. Brainiac 5 doesn't know what's going on. They're kind of fighting through it to see what's going on. They get into the med bay, and there they see Celeste out of her bed or sitting up, and she's just bathed in this green light, but she is awake and obviously alive and just kind of soaking in this green light. And we don't know yet exactly what it is, but we kind of know what it is. It's
We kind of know what it is. There's and the thing that I love about this, and again, tell me if you want to like wait to go through the whole thing and then
no
pick it
no
apart.
no no go ahead.
But so the first thing is before you said like Rock makes this mission team, and it's a get your goosebumps ready because he says I made a mission team, and Cam goes, wait, you sent them out on a mission and they went, and he says, yeah, we're back, Cam. The Legion is back. So okay, goosebumps. Then, as you said, it's all nine panel grid, nine panel grid, nine panel grid. You turn the page, this picture of Celeste bathed in green light is a splash page. And
Yes.
so it just hits you. You have been like, where, it's always nine panels. And then you get this, one page image. It's boom. And we saw her bloodied and bruised and all that stuff. It's gone. So she's been cured by whatever this is. We don't know what it is yet, but that's sort of a kapow moment when you think about the routine that you've been getting in of reading nine panels all over.
Right. And we can spoil what it is. It's a Green Lantern ring.
Yes,
Yeah, that's a
yes.
great way to
Except
put
she
it.
doesn't wield a ring. It's like the energy is
Yes,
imbued in
yes,
her.
you're correct. You're correct. Yes, it's the Green Lantern energy, but similar to kind of similar to Jade. Isn't Jade doesn't
Kind
wear
of
a
similar to
ring
Jade.
either.
Yeah. Yeah.
From the Justice Society, obviously. And okay, so who do we have next? Who do we see next here in the next page? We got a page
Yeah. So,
devoted
you know,
to.
yeah, when you
Go
see
ahead.
pictures of the team, there's a character called Furball. That's this big, hulking, almost like werewolf looking thing. And then we see on Wyneth, it's Timberwolf, who is like affected by the lunar cycle, because all of a sudden he looks much, much more human. He's not in this monstrous form, and he's like so ashamed of the fact. He's like, I can't go to them and let them know that this is me. Although we know that Ultra Boy knows that's who he is. He's like, because you know, I'm dumb old Furball, I'm their pet, and I'm too embarrassed to do that. So even though he knows about all of the stuff that's happening in Roxas, he's just hiding out in the woods. This is the first time we learn that Furball is Timberwolf. So this was another big eye-opening thing.
Right. And he's got Timberwolf is kind of back to his Dave Cockrum Wolverine look, which is cool. It's kind of nice to see. He's got the hair. He's got the kind of widow's peak with the flare and the hair and everything like that. And he's just walking around naked, drinking water out of a stream and everything. So it's good. It's good to have Timberwolf back. So and then we cut to Science Police. And what happens next in here, Ange? What's going on with the science police here?
So basically they're like they've also been called in to track down Roxas because the Dominators, as you say, the Dominators hire him and they're like, he's going to be a very discreet agent for us and like pick them off quietly. And Roxas is anything but quiet. It's a very, very public execution of everything. And so the Dominators are like, we have to take him out before he like opens up his mouth. So they send the science police in. And the science police are like, you know, there are these weird life forms that we're picking up, but they're flickering. We don't know what's going on. And then they're like, oh my God, the Legionnaires are here. Like, thank God, it feels like old times because the Legion has been forced to disband by the United Planets. And then we see that actually all of this stuff that we're hearing, Roxas is also hearing because he's holding up one of the communicators. He's killed one of the science police. And he goes, oh, I can't wait for the Legion to come and visit me.
And the science police have kind of taken on in this 5 years later run a new look. They have kind of they look a lot more militarized. They are wearing full face masks and everything. Basically, in this, EarthGov has become this fascist state. Good to know that would never happen in real life. And so they've taken on, again, with the Dominators taking over Earth, they've really militarized science police, where they used to in the old version, you'd see their faces. They kind of had the helmets, and they all had the black. They're kind of like black and like a
Yeah, purplish
purplish
almost,
gray or something, like a like thing. But faces clear. Now they're in full mask, padded up, kind of in that 90s way. Lots of pockets, lots of guns, and everything. So, and then we cut to the Legionnaires, who are out hunting Roxas. We see Violet, we see Element, we see Element Lad, and we see Lightning Lass. And what happens next? They go
we
ahead.
see so like throughout this whole thing, you just see like clearly Roxas has he's insane. He's talking to himself. There's like multiple voices in his head. And so we heard about those, like, oh, there were these life forms, but they're flickering. Isn't that weird? And then like Violet turns the corner and he's like lit corpses on fire. So the heat signatures that they're seeing, the flickering is like corpses on fire. Okay, that's like a bad guy. Like they're doing everything they can to show us Roxas is no good. And then you see Roxas again. He had just had the snot kicked out of him by Ultra Boy. So he's like bruised. He's got this big bloody spot on his forehead, which looks very similar to a Dominator. I'm sure that's on purpose. And he's like, come out wherever you are, Violet. He really wants to take these guys on. The Legion shows up, and Lightning Lass is there. And she's like, this is the end of the line, you little puke. You're just nuts. So what's it going to be? And then Element Lad shows up and he's like, are you going to cower it out again? And he pulls out a device, right? Like what looks like a grenade.
Before we get to that, Let's talk a little bit about what Roxas looks like. Do you want to
Yeah.
kind of talk a little bit about that?
So, one of the things that Giffen really gave like a very specific look to this. And a lot of the clothes appear like something that you would see in like a movie like Amadeus or in that sort of stuff. So he's got this very like flowery, almost like the puffy shirt that Seinfeld wore, but the pink,
Very
right?
Victorian age almost.
Yeah, it's very Victorian age. Pink, fluffy, puffy sleeves with and he has throughout the book had like half of his face like vertically in makeup. So he's got like lipstick on one half of his mouth, eyeshadow on one half of his mouth, and the other side's okay. Here, he almost looks like Two-Face because he's gotten the snot kicked out of him by somebody with superpowers. And then he like went to a doctor and said, like, fix me up. And the doctor was like, there's not much I can do. I'll do what I can. And then, of course, that doctor gets killed. So, and he's got crazy sideburns, just like he's covered in blood all over the place. He looks a complete mess.
And he's got, like you said, the lipstick. So he's who he reminds me of. Have you ever seen the movie? This is a decent comparison. The movie Rob Roy with Liam Neeson.
Yes.
The actor is Tim
Yeah.
Roth. Tim Roth?
Yeah,
That's
Tim
his name.
Roth.
Tim Roth plays this kind of dandy who's looks like, you kind of look at him and it's like, this guy's nothing tough. And then he's just a badass with a sword and just vicious and cruel and mean and does horrible
Yes.
things in that movie. And you can't wait for him to get his comeuppance.
Yeah,
And he
yeah.
does. He does in
He
the
does.
end. Yes, he does pretty viciously. But yeah, that's kind of who Roxas reminds me of in this run. He kind of reminds me of that Tim Roth character from Rob Roy. But good movie. So sorry, I just wanted to kind of point that out before we get to the end of Roxas's story here. So go ahead. And one thing I wanted you to sort of describe is, now this is page 11, 11 of
Yeah.
the of the comic book. When I read this originally, and even the second time, I was a little unclear what exactly was happening here on this page because,
Yeah.
like you said, they confront him. They're calling him names. They're like, "What are you going to do? What are you going to do?" And he pulls out what looks like a giant, like, pill. It's like a pill shape.
Yeah.
It almost looks, it's like the size of those, what were those things called? Those Beats pill speakers, if you know what I mean.
Oh,
That's like the
yeah.
size of one of those. So he pulls this out, and then you see three panels of kind of it almost looks like people being torn apart. It's what it looks like in the page. And
Yeah.
then another thing where it says doom, across the last three panels. And you see like bravo, woo, you see like it's almost like people are applauding. I was completely confused of what was happening here.
Yeah.
Now, what I did consult was this terrific website you guys can go to. It's called Legion of Super Bloggers, blogspot.blogspot.com. And I read the breakdown of this particular issue by none other than our guest right here, Dr. Ange, who spelled it out perfectly. But I had no idea what exactly was happening. So
Yeah.
can you please tell us what is happening on this page?
Yeah. So this is like the big thing. And I can put myself into reading this for the first time. We've already seen him. He like blows up Block. I don't know if you remember that
Yes,
issue, but
tears
like
him apart.
Block is like completely dismembered at the end of it.
Yes.
And at this point, we think he's
And then
killed Ultra
ships
Block.
Block's pieces to Winnith for the and
Yeah.
the address
Yeah.
addressed to I think it's addressed to Lightning Lad and Saturn Girl's child, is it not?
Yes.
Yes, which is just awful. So sorry, I interrupted, but I had to point
No,
that
no,
out. Just
no.
to,
And at this point, we think he's killed Ultra Boy because like there was a fight with Ultra Boy. He pulled out a weapon, and then Ultra Boy, like all you see is smoke. So he pulls out this thing, and he's like, you didn't believe me, none of you. Well, believe in this. Pulls out this thing that looks like a grenade. There are three panels, as you say, because we're a nine panel grid. It reminded me of in Watchmen when Osterman says like the light is ripping me apart, right? So you have these three panels where it looks like he's vaporized our three legionnaires, and there's this big boom. So I was like, I wouldn't put it past Giffen to kill these legionnaires, right? Like I actually thought they were. And then you turn the page, and it turns out that it's probably just a flash grenade. That's what we're dealing with, because they're completely unharmed. And that Bravo, Bravo encore are like the voices
The
in
voices in
Roxas's
his head.
head
Okay. Yes. Right.
as he's like, "Oh, you pulled off this big move. Hooray for you."
Right. Okay. So thank you, and thank you for your expert blog, because I that completely, even to this day, like when I was reading this again, I read this multiple times before we recorded. And I to this day, I'm like, what happened? Now, obviously, I know that they didn't die, but I'm like,
Yeah.
what exactly happened? And it's not really explained. So I'm sorry. So go ahead. So what happens next? We have the big
Yeah.
thume. We get to the next page, and
Yeah.
what has happened?
And now here's what I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to stop. Like I said, this was the issue that I wanted to do. There were several moments in this issue that I wanted to talk
Right.
about.
Right.
I think about this page as the most important moment in this entire comic series, one of my favorite moments in comic history. And then I'll tell you, I talked to Keith Giffen about it in person, but I'll
Oh,
get there, I
okay.
promise.
Yeah,
So
no.
you cut to the next page, and you can see that Roxas is basically like dying. His word balloons are all like warped, and he's like, there are ellipses between all of his words, and he's like, "I bid you all a fond adieu," and he basically falls over. He's like
Right.
lost so much blood, he's fallen over. And here's Element Lad. As you have said, Roxas has killed Element Lad's entire planet. If
Right.
anybody has cause for revenge, it's Element Lad. And he goes,
And sorry, Ange, just to point out too, the three heroes are all just are standing there unharmed as
they're
well.
all
So
standing
like,
there
yeah,
unharmed.
right.
So this is
Okay.
just a flash grenade that went off, and they're like,
Right.
"Oh,
Right.
so Element Lad goes like, "Boy, Joe, Ultra Boy, really must have pounded him." And then Lightning Lad says, "If we don't do something, he's going to die right here." And then Shrinking Violet grows because she's been in small form, so
Right.
she's now human form, and she goes, "After what he did to Block and Joe, I really don't think I give a damn." And Lightning Lad says, "It is better than he deserves." And then here's the crux of the whole thing. Here's Element Lad, and he goes,
Right.
"No, this isn't about him or his atrocities or even justice. It's about us and how much of us would die in this room with him." And in that panel where he says that, so first of all, it's like the Legion doesn't kill, and the Legion isn't going to even like passively let somebody die from the injuries that he had. That's not who we are. And if we start to do that, then we've lost everything that we are. We may as well die here. And
Right.
the panel that they're saying that, the characters are way in the background, and there's this like burning corpse in the foreground, as if to say, like, yeah, like you could justify letting him die, but they're not going to let that happen. Most like I get goosebumps every time I read this page. It is such a powerful moment, especially if at this point you've read the Legion for like 15 years.
Sure.
Just unbelievable. Now, at a convention, when I went to talk to Keith Giffen about this, I was like, "This is my favorite moment in the book." And he goes, "I thought they should have let Roxas die. It was the beer bombs who said, 'No, you can't let them let Roxas die.'" So,
That's great.
I think that's just funny.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
So, yes, I agree. I think that is a seminal moment in not only the 5 year later, not only this issue, not only in the 5 year later, but in the Legion as a whole. It sort of sums up what they're about, because he has, they all do, but especially Element Lad has every reason in the world to want this guy dead. And not just dead, but painfully dead,
Yeah.
in the worst ways possible. But he's above that, and he's better than that. And he's kind of gone through this spiritual journey as well.
Yeah.
He was a nomad. I mean, he was basically spending years on his dead planet, where he was converting all the bodies to something. I can't remember what it was. Wasn't
He
it like
was
plants or something?
making like, yeah, like some crystal,
Oh, crystals.
like
That's right. That's right. Yes.
a grave marker for
Right.
every single person who died. So he's like
Yes.
wandering the planet and
Yeah.
just like, so.
So, okay. So we step away from that. We cut away. And where are we now?
And here we are with Ultra Boy. So we thought he was dead. We have this great moment where it's like, oh, we should let him die because he killed Ultra Boy.
Right.
And then we see Ultra Boy, and it just says elsewhere. And he's like wandering around this planet, and he's like, the moons are wrong, the constellations are wrong, you're not on Winnith anymore. And then he like turns the corner and he's like, there's this like old Kundian like vehicle. And he goes, yeah, I've only seen fossils of this. This must be a mock-up. And then he runs into some Kuns who are speaking like, he's like, that is a ancient dialect of Kundian, but all right, like, you know, take me to your leader. And so it does turn out that what Roxas had was almost like a time bomb, and he throws Joe into the past. And that's why the vehicle he sees is an antique. They're talking a language that he doesn't really quite understand. It's really elsewhen, not elsewhere.
And the Kuns, you always have to be careful how you say that.
Yes.
They they have been in Legion lore for a long time, sort of this. I think at the time they were an allegory to the Soviets, probably. So it
Yeah.
kind of ties into the way in Star Trek, the Klingons, sort of similar thing, this kind of
Yeah.
antagonistic race, this warrior race that could always be, thrown out there if they needed a bad guy or they needed to deal with something diplomatic or something like that. The Kuns were always a good one, good go-to. So they've been around a long time. Okay, so we step away from Joe and we start getting into one of the re and again, they let Roxas live. Or they didn't let him die. And while they had every reason to do so, it was better they didn't, because what happens next? What is revealed?
Yeah, so the next page we cut to basically like a news report, and the first thing that you know they go, Roxas has been taken into custody. It is reported the science police and a group of legionnaires cooperated in the arrest. Here's a great line: his life was saved when legionnaires administered first aid. So like they probably like bound his wounds and like took care of him, as crazy as that sounds. And then we'll try to reach the Legionnaires later. However, there are some mysteries that are remaining. Are the Legionnaires back? And meanwhile, the Daily Planet is reporting statements from Roxas himself that he was hired by the EarthGov with the express purpose of assassinating the Legionnaires. So they left him alive. He's now spilled the beans. Everybody knows that the EarthGov is corrupt.
Which wouldn't have been done if they let him die. So
Yeah.
now I don't know how much would people take the word of a mass murderer.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know, but yeah, it does sort of expose EarthGov a bit, more so than usual. And then we cut back to Rock and Cam back at Winnith, and what's going on with them? What do we see?
Yes, we do have a reveal. So, Cam is like, how great they got Roxas, and Rock is like, yeah, except this time not all of us made it back. And then Cam was like, well, let me show you something that'll cheer you up. And he's got these uniforms, these like gray jackets and pants that have the Legion symbol on it. But I like this thing. He's like, can it wait? This is Rock, Cosmic Boy. Can it wait? I've got to debrief the team. And Cam is like, debrief the team. I love that Legion talk, right? Like, that's just great. And then he goes, do you think that anybody will really wear them? Cosmic Boy says about these jackets, and Chameleon Boy takes off the hood. He's completely fine. It's the orange head with the antenna and the ears. And he goes like, listen, Rock, if you wear yours, they'll wear theirs. So don't just stand there. Try it on. Super close up of the Legion L, which is on like the shoulder of the jacket. And then I'm going to tell you, it's crazy. Turn the page. And it's just like a full page of space and stars, and then in the middle of it just says the Legion of Superheroes. And I'm getting goosebumps now. I've read this a billion times, right? But it's such a culmination of this first year of like they're struggling. They had to take on Mordru because White Witch was in his like harem, and all of this crazy stuff has happened, and the universe is like Sunboy is working for the Dominators, and then this is like in a movie where like the end happens, and then all of a sudden, like boom, like Star Wars is on the screen, right? Like Iron Man, right? So it's just so cinematic to me. And again, it's one of those things where nine panel grid, nine panel grid, nine panel grid, turn the page, the Legion of
Boom.
Superheroes. Boom. Just fantastic.
Yeah, it is terrific. Now we are not done yet, so
Yes.
we cut away and we're on quarantine. So I'll be honest, I don't really remember quarantine. What's the deal with quarantine?
I think basically it's like a medical facility, but the quarantine part of it is, and boy, we're really going deep into Legion lore. So you may remember the Curse of Validus, where
Yes.
Darkseid takes one of Saturn Girl and Lightning Lad's twin boys, turns them into Validus, and sends them back in time. And then there's a story where Saturn Girl, like, basically, like, faces down Darkseid, who turns Validus back into a baby boy,
Right.
who is now called Garadin. But then there's something called the Validus Plague that anybody who has been in contact with him dies of this illness. So
Right.
another curse of Darkseid. And so Garadin is on this like medical facility in quarantine.
Gotcha. And so with that curse, now you mentioned that curse, actually Lightning Lad was infected with that, survived, but he had
Yeah.
an inflamed leg because of that, which is why he sort of walks around with a cane.
Yes, yes.
And just that, and just really playing into that plantation thing too, is just,
Yeah.
it's almost uncomfortably. Yes. So we're on quarantine, and there is a break in the quarantine. The Persuader, one of their old villains from the Fatal Five, who can forget the Fatal Five? Persuader is he basically. I don't. Is this his mask, or did he steal one? I think he stole one from one of the science police guys, maybe that he took down. It kind of
Yeah,
looks
I
like
mean,
that, sort of.
it certainly looks like it. He
Yeah.
always had kind of like that
Right.
faceplate,
Yeah, a
so.
similar faceplate. Yeah. So, and his thing is, he's a big burly dude who carries this axe that is sort of all powerful, can cut through anything. And he breaks in, and there's a guy on quarantine who takes him on, who goes by the name of Kent Shakespeare. Now, this is the first time we meet Mr. Shakespeare here. So do you want to explain who Kent Shakespeare is?
I'll do my best to explain it. So, Giffen really wanted to lean into Legion history, and he was hoping that he would be able to put Superboy, and he was hoping that he would even be able to put Supergirl into the Legion, and both of those things were not allowed. And he also wanted to keep continuity as intact as he possibly could, and it's impossible to have continuity with the Legion if you remove Superboy and Supergirl, because they were involved in
Of
so many
course.
stories. So that's why, as I said before, like at the end of issue 4 of this run, Mon-El kills the time trapper that stops the Legion from ever being formed. A whole other timeline happens where Mordru rises to power. And then in this new timeline, which only exists in issue 5, a group of people that are like Legionnaires, sort of, Rond Vidar, Pharaoh Lad, other people, perform a magic spell where they recreate the time trapper in the form of Glorith, who is one of the big villains here,
Right.
and it rewrites the timeline again. And that allows Giffen to bring Laurel Gand in, who is a Daxamite, but who's blonde and who is the Supergirl equivalent, and then Kent Shakespeare, who I think is the semi-equivalent of Superboy. He has glasses on. His first name is Kent, like
Sure,
Clark
Clark Kent,
Kent.
yeah.
And I think that I
What
think
about
I
the
heard someone
Shakespeare part?
I think that I heard about the Shakespeare part was that they were like, we were just like writing him in. And then they were like, oh, like a writer, like Shakespeare. So I think that's how they explained it. And so he's certainly not Kryptonian, I would say, in his level of power, but like if you think about all of the Kryptonian powers outside of Vision, I think he's got all of those, but not quite as high.
Yeah,
So he's
he again, for another equivalent, I keep making these comparisons with the characters. He kind of reminds me of what Roy Thomas did in a kind of a similar situation with Iron Monroe. Kind of like a big, strong guy, closer to like a Golden Age Superman level, probably not, maybe not quite that powerful, but kind of the all-American, or so to speak, type of guy, the do-gooder who's going to stand up for what's right and is not going to back down and everything, and it's the good dude.
exactly.
So yeah, so that's kind of what we have here. And so he's kind of on the losing end of this battle.
Yeah.
He's kind of getting his butt handed to him, and at the end, Okay, so we do encounter another character as well. So if you, we don't have to go panel, we don't have to go page by page with it. Do you just kind of want to explain what happens in during this?
Yeah, so the science police are like, oh my gosh, like the persuader's there, we need to go in.
Right.
Kent Shakespeare is there because Kent Shakespeare actually works there. He's actually like one of the medical people on the thing. And then from outside, we see Colossal Boy, Jim Allen, who is a member of the science police, who's like, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to do things. And somebody says like, this is not the Legion, sir. And you, with all respect, are no longer Colossal Boy. So he's like sort of stuck watching what happens
Right.
as you say, Kent Shakespeare just gets fed his lunch in this
Yeah.
fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And it ends with a big splash page of the persuader holding his axe over Kent Shakespeare about to
Yeah. Give
destroy
my
him.
regards to all the heroes on Shangala, which is the Legion graveyard where we see all
Right.
of those statues and things like
Right,
that.
right, right. So, and in a lot of issues, we do have two kind of postscripts, so to speak. We have the one, and these were basically like full page written pages where they would kind of break kind of similar to like what Alan Moore, a lot of, again, a lot of this ties into Watchmen, the nine panel grid and a lot of these, this stuff. But the way Alan Moore would kind of have the written items at the end of every issue. And this is sort of a notice from the people who are making the uniforms, the Legion jackets and everything, correct? And it's kind of him, it's like Chameleon Boy going back and forth with them, adding notes and everything. So was there anything in particular you wanted to say about that? But
Well, the first thing I'll say
yeah.
is like, it feels like a new universe. And so when you read, like, there's like always two of these at the end. So some of them are like, what are these eyeless robots you're seeing around? So it like talks about drones. One of them is like, I think recipes or something. Like it's all this weird stuff, but I think it's to like world build a little bit of this new
Sure,
universe. The
sure.
one thing that sticks out in this one is that somewhere they're like, we're not going to put the Legion symbol on the shoulder. We're going to put like the brand corporation logo on the shoulder.
Right.
And Chameleon Boy is like, no, it just
Yeah,
says
yeah.
no. Right. So that was the one that I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah. And then the other one's an APB about the Persuader, actually. It kind of explains a little bit more what was going on with him. So and then we get a letters column and the issue's over. So we can get into a second. I do want to ask one question right off the bat. Do you think the issue should have had the Kent Shakespeare stuff, or should it have just ended with Legion of Superheroes? Like I feel like we could have expanded the Roxas battle a little bit longer. And that's a type of storytelling. A lot of times, you'll see this in television shows sometimes, or in other comic books, where there's all this battling, and then when it comes to the finale, the battle's over pretty quick, and then so they can get to a lot of stuff afterwards. Kind of like all the stuff afterwards. I felt that it was like it was fine if they wanted to introduce him. I almost think they could have just done it in the next issue. They could have just started there, because it was sort of, you had this triumphant, the Legion is back, and then one of their soon to be members again is getting his ass kicked. I mean, right away. So it's kind of like, you could have done more on Wyneth. There's more we could have done. We didn't see some of the characters at all. We didn't see Garth or Imra, or some of the other characters at all. We could have fleshed that out a little bit more. Could have done a little more with the Roxas fight, or them hunting him down, or Roxas, killing more science police or something, just stuff like that. I felt they could have done that. Do you think kind of the same thing, or yeah.
I'm completely with you. I feel it's like ever do this, like where you're watching a movie on television at home and you're like, this should be the end. And then you like
Yeah.
click information and you're like, 18 more minutes. What are we doing? Right? And so I completely agree with you. It's like, oh my God, you turn the page, boom, the Legion of Superheroes, goosebumps. And then you're like, wait, where are we? Who is this? What is going on? It almost
Yeah.
dilutes the powerful moment that you just got through. So
Right.
I agree with you. If I could have said one thing, it's like, you've done crazy pacing in this book all along.
Right.
You should have stuck the landing, which they did just 5 pages too early.
Yeah. Just could have ended it there. But what did you think? Now, this is like you said, this culminates a year. It was 12 issues plus the annual. I think there was an annual that came out right before the 12th issue. Or maybe right, was it right after or right before? I think it was right
I think it was,
before, right?
I'll have to
Somewhere
look.
around there with
Right around.
Garth. Yeah. Anyway, this first year, which really just sort of, set the stage and build everything out. And again, this was not beloved by all Legion fans. Not in the slightest. And this was coming from now they had waned a bit. The Legion of Superheroes, believe it or not, was on par with the Wolfman and Perez Teen Titans. Is like those were like the two pillar books in DC in the early to mid 80s. I mean, that was it, leading up to kind of like right before Crisis on Infinite Earths. Those were the two most popular books. They were the two that they kind of put in it was called Baxter, the Baxter editions, where they used a nicer, shinier, glossier paper and everything else, and kind of restarted series from number one. So the Legion had a long run in that series, and then ended, and then started over from this, and just kind of, this is back when you didn't know too much about what was going on. I mean, if it happened now, people would have known months ago that it was like, oh my God, this is what they're doing, everything. But this was a surprise. And I was collecting these. I was a teenager at this point. I was collecting these as they came out. When this started, were you reading the old Legion series before this started?
Yeah, I was on board with the Baxter series. I was collecting the Baxter series monthly.
Gotcha.
The Magic Wars happens,
Right,
ends.
right, right. The Magic War ends, and then we go to this. So, what did you think when this came out? What was your impression when you read issue one of this series?
So like I said, like when you think about it, and you even sort of mentioned it, right? The science police, big shoulder pads, pouches everywhere, ginormous guns. It's the age of image, or it's right about the age of image. It's like the Punisher has five books on the stands where he's like just mowing people down with machine guns. And my worry was that, like, hey, the Legion has always had, like, we have a constitution, and if you violate the constitution, we're kicking you off the team. There is a strict no kill rule. Like, and so when you read the first couple of issues, first of all, I was like, what am I even reading here with this nine panel grid? And you really got to know a lot of stuff here to sort of get what's going on. I honestly thought I was going to be like, I'm going to collect this for a few months, and then it's clearly just going to be like the edgy, extreme Legion, and I'm not going to like it. And then as you read more, you're like, oh, yeah, the universe is really dark, but these guys are keeping their ethics about them. And as they become more and more prominent in this universe, like more and more people are like rallying around them, like we need them. And I'll say, and I keep going back to this, when you've got the guts to reboot the universe twice in two issues in this very experimental way, and then the next storyline is it's Rock is like, we have to start rescuing the or gathering the legions that we can. We're going to go take on Mordru and get the White Witch out of there because she's being like abused in every possible way in his harem. And if you remember that issue, you read like half of that issue is like a text or like a storybook. There's a picture and texts, and you're like, that's very experimental. And you keep reading along. There's the issue where Roxas starts to beat everybody up on Winnith. The next issue is a humor issue
Yeah,
of
with
Matter
Matter
Eater,
Eater Lad, yeah.
right? And you go, boy, they're taking big swings with this. This is
Yeah.
like really, really creative in a way that I think is
Yeah.
great. And then you get to this issue and you go, I don't have to be worried anymore. I think that this team's in the right hands. They're going to do what needs to happen.
You're doing a good job of talking me down, so I'm gonna just kind of explain. So it was jarring to me, the massive change. Now, I'll admit, as the kind of last part, the Magic Wars and leading up to that, I was losing a little bit of interest. I was losing some steam on the series. I don't know. I mean, it had been around a long time. They were kind of trying different things. It wasn't working. Giffen actually came back and was drawing it again. And they all had like these new uniforms that were really overwrought, and everything. Like you said, lots of pockets and stuff like that. Really kind of, big shoulder pads, all that stuff. So that ended, and then all of a sudden, boom, we have this issue that where it's Cosmic Boy Rock Kryn kind of standing in this rubble, with his head down and a trench coat and everything. We realized that, like, oh my God, what happened? He doesn't have his powers. Like, what's going on here? And I think it is good. It's obviously symbolic that it starts with Rock because he was the very first leader who was actually they say technically the first legionnaire, but there were three of them basically to start, but he
Yeah.
was the first leader. So I'm reading this, and I'll be honest, I love Keith Giffen, and he had a lot of changes to his art style throughout the years. He kind of started more of almost a Kirby clone in the early years of his artwork, and then sort of I felt, he really reached an apex when during the Dark Great Darkness saga. He had a lot
Yeah.
of detail and a lot of, and he was really kind of showing every character had their own look. And this was a lot of characters to deal with. And then after that, as it went along, after it got past, like, I think issue 300, his style started to change a little bit. And he was emulating an Argentinian artist named Jose Antonio Munoz,
Yep.
and which was more like the faces were a little more elongated. It was a more cartoony style. It was a lot of close-ups, baggier clothes, muddier art. It's just kind of everything was a little different. And then actually for a while, he started, this was with the old series. When he came back towards the very end of that Baxter series, he actually was starting to then emulate Kevin Maguire a little bit with the more facial expressions and things like that, and the new uniforms and everything. So Giffen's always been a bit of a mimic. I'm not saying that as in a derogatory term. That's just his art style. He would mimic different things and kind of make it his own. And then he went back for the 5 years later. He definitely went back more to the Munoz style.
Yeah.
When I was reading this, and I think it was a lot harder because I'm a teenager, I'm reading this month to month. I think that this is a series a lot easier to read if you have a collection of it or if you're
Yeah.
reading it, on the app 40 years later. But it was hard to understand what was going on. And they didn't. Now, granted, I had a lot of background with the Legion of Superheroes. I knew what their real names were. I knew a lot of this stuff. I knew a lot of the history and everything. But if you didn't know that, they weren't doing you any favors. They were not explaining things as they went along. There was a lot of inside baseball stuff where you had to know what was going on or you were completely lost. And I knew what was going on. I was still completely lost in some of this stuff. And a lot of that had to do, I felt, with his style of art, where I'm looking at this panel, I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Is that an arm? Is that like where, like who is that? Like what are they doing? Why is it the same thing four times? And I felt after a while, they were dedicated to this nine-panel grid style. Every page was broken up into nine comic panels, three across three times, three, three, three. And sometimes they would take two or three of those panels and kind of make it one image, but they'd still have the panels broken up. And occasionally you'd have a splash page of the whole page, but they stuck to that. And I felt they got to a point to me where the grid was almost a burden. Like I felt like the nine panel grid was directing the storytelling more than the storytelling was directing the art. You know what I mean? Like they were almost, they were so wed to this that I think they got to a point where they were so far up their own ass that it was getting in the way of things, and it was kind of taking away from momentous things because unless they were going to make it a splash page, it was just another panel. So I think that took away from some of the dramatic scenes. I think that kind of took away from some of the storytelling. Now, the actual story of this is variable. They killed a lot of their darlings. I mean, they murdered Block horribly, who was sort of this lovable, innocent character in the series for a long time. They take away Cosmic Boy's powers. Lightning Lad, and spoiler alert, if you don't want to know about this, skip ahead a minute or two. But basically, it turns out later, Lightning Lad isn't Garth Ranz. He was a protee who were these protoplasmic creatures that one was basically a pet of Chameleon Boy's for a while. But way back when Garth Ranz, this was an early Adventure Comics story, died, and they all held up lightning rods to try to bring him back to life. Turns out he never came back to life. One of the proteas assumed his identity and took over his life. And I'm still not sure exactly how that worked, that he had his powers and everything, and how he was able to give birth to children with Saturn Girl and everything. But you hear about that, so there were a lot of things they did, they mixed in, there was some humor mixed in, like we mentioned, Matter Eater Lad was sort of always the comic relief in this. He was an ex-senator who was kind of a lawyer, and he would do crazy stuff and kind of rejoined with the team. You had dark, some of the Roxas was sort of, there was some dark humor along the way with that too, some real macabre stuff. And then, like I said, Matt earlier, Ladd kind of brought some genuine fun to the series as well. So I think overall, when I look back at this, and I basically, when we talked about it, because we got in touch a month or two ago about doing this. And I was like, you know what? I can't just read 12. I'm going to start at one. I'm going to reread this. And I did. And there were parts I appreciated more than I did at the time. And there were parts I understood better. I did at the time rereading and be like, oh, okay, that makes more sense now that I think about it. I don't want to say it's a noble failure because I don't think it's a failure, but it was very interesting. And I had the entire run, so I must have liked something. I mean, this particular Legion series, while it changed dramatically as it went along, I think went about 125 issues, something like that. And I have all of them. So I think I liked it better when the younger Legion was brought in and more or less after 0 Hour became the lead, they took over. And this version of the Legion sort of washed away. It was I think I appreciate more the boldness, the guts it took to do something like this, because like you said, it took a lot of big swings and it did a lot of stuff. I would not say this is my favorite version of the Legion, but I can understand why some people, yourself included, it is to them. And like I said, I think I honestly, and as a graphic designer, as an artist myself, I think the biggest problem for me with this series was I think there were some major failures in the artwork. And I don't like saying that, I'm not, that's hard for me to say because I don't want to dump on somebody's artwork. And Keith Giffen was a singular talent. And I enjoy a ton of what he did. I just felt he got so wed to this nine panel thing. Obviously, they all bought into it, the beer bombs as well. And his dedication to that Munoz style, I think, was a little bit of a disservice to the overall storyline, the overall plot. I think at times it was a disservice. Sometimes it worked very well. What I would have liked to see, now, it doesn't go on too much longer after this issue. But what I would have liked to seen as soon as that we had the splash page, Legion of Superheroes, that they abandoned the nine panel grid. That after that they opened it up. I wish at that point, like that would have been, I think that would have been a good way for them if they wanted to have this Kent Shakespeare thing at the end. I think that would have been a good way to do it. All of a sudden, just open it up. It's just regular comic panels. Do what you want with it. Abandon the nine panel grid because it's so. I know I'm going on for a while, and I apologize for that. I'm gonna have you
No,
talk.
no, no.
I'm gonna
I'm
have you
loving
talk me down from this in just a minute. But the nine panel grid can also be so constricting, and I think in a way it sort of worked for the mood and the feel because they were trapped. This was a fascist planet at this point. Everybody was stuck, or they were being held down. The Legion was being held back, and that nine panel grid does give that sort of claustrophobic feel, and it worked. But I think they really could have spelled it out visually as soon as you had that splash page, no more nine panel grid, abandoned. I think that could have been the way to go. Like I said, it doesn't go on too much longer, and whenever they had guest artists, they weren't wed to that. It was only Giffen, but I think he could have just. I think if he had done away with it, I think it would have worked a little bit. But sorry, go ahead.
No, the only thing I'll say is two things. When you read one of these issues, it was a full meal, right? Because it was like, it's like nine panels of information on every single page. This is not something that you're going to read in 4 minutes and put it down. If
That's very true, yes.
And if you think about like, again, this is like the time that Image is coming on board, the time that all of those artists were like, I can sell my art for big money, and a splash page goes for more. So almost
Yes.
every page is going to be like two-thirds of a splash page. And like you pick up Savage Dragon and you're like 2 minutes later, you're like, oh, he like beat somebody up on the street, done.
Yes.
So I wonder if there was some sort of reaction from Giffen to sort of say, like, you know, we have to revolt a little bit against this like lack of storytelling to sort of do so much more. But I can tell you that there were people, like friends of mine, were like, I can't read that. I don't know what's going on. I don't have your encyclopedic knowledge of people's names and planets. Like, I didn't even know she had lightning powers, right? Like, you know, so I think that there is sort of like a little bit of a turnoff. It's not welcoming in something, in some ways. So I do think that makes it tough. I'll tell you that, like, when I went up to Giffen and I put number one down to get signed, I was like, this is my favorite Legion run. And he goes, oh, you're the guy, right? Because he probably heard from so many people like that it was, like you say, a glorious failure. But I think
I do
for
retract the word failure.
yeah,
Because
yeah,
I don't consider it a failure. Although
yeah.
I have nothing, I don't think there's anything wrong with failures in artwork and stuff like that. Because somebody's always going to love it. But what I mean by that is that just it wasn't, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought that it, when I say failure, I guess I mean more that I think it didn't open it enough to really bring a lot of new people in,
For sure.
I guess if it failed in something, it failed to create a larger audience.
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
think because, and just from its own weight, you know, it kind of did that. And it was like a private party, and you know, you had to answer, you know, you had to know the secret code at the door if you want, you know, secret password at the door if
For
you want to
sure.
get in.
For
So,
sure.
so I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but then the only other thing I'll say is, like, how often do you say, like, oh, that like issue of Legionnaires drawn by Chris Sprouse, right? Or any, but we're still talking about 9-panel grids and text pages and 5YL. Like, that gets mentioned a lot more than I would say, like, the Abnett Lanning run, the Archie Legion, right? Like, for some reason, this still sticks out, and probably because it took all of those big swings, right? So I completely get it. Like, but I'm sure that if you went to that blog and you read those things, I just poured my love into those reviews of those issues, man. Like, I just like love this.
No,
So.
it was I like I said, I told you, and I seriously did. I went to the blog and read the review that you wrote of issue 12. And yeah, it's clear. You do pour your heart out in that, and it's great. I recommend anybody read that. It's from I think you wrote it in 2014. Is that correct? I think that's what it
Yeah,
said on there, like 2014.
it was like 2014, and I did the first 61 issues of this because when Zero Hour happens and they erase the 5YL timeline, I actually quit reading the Legion because I
Really?
was so enamored of this run that I was like, forget it, man. I'm not going to read it. And so I say there was a 10-year, like, I read the Legion all of my life. Zero Hour happens. I don't read the Legion for 10 years.
Really?
I come back when Wade does the three boot.
Wade did two because he was on with the Archie Legion for a while too,
Yes,
right?
he was on
And
with that,
yeah,
but
and then he was yes, he was on the, and that's where for a while it became Supergirl in the Legion, Supergirls,
correct,
correct? Yeah,
correct.
she
Yeah.
was a big part of that.
Yeah.
I have again, I have all of that too. I mean, I have, you know, it's my least, I have about four long boxes full of
Yeah,
Legion stuff,
exactly.
you
It's
know,
that
because
drawer and that drawer and that drawer. Oh.
And it's kind of one of those series that I would never sell.
Yeah.
One, I don't, most of it's not particularly all that, you know, worth all that much. But I just like it, I can't at that point. And
Yeah.
it's been the kind of fun. There's a couple random issues from like Superboy 200 to 40. That's right. There's a couple I'm missing. So it's kind of one of those fun whenever I encounter a new comic book store, I'll dig through just to see if they have a couple. You know, it's just a handful that I'm missing. But you know, it's always kind of fun. And half the time I'll end up buying one and I'm like, I already have that. When I get home, I'm like, I already have it. So there's a bunch of the early, especially the Grell stuff that I have like a couple duplicates of. But yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about it in general. Like, so where does your love of the Legion come from? Like, what, like, obviously you were reading it well before the 5YL, so it's not just that. Like, what is it about it that attracts you, or what that you enjoy about it?
Again, we'll go back, like the first ones that I read were in that like 211 range, right? And so it was like, oh, these are kids that are superheroes that have a club that are like going out and kicking butt, right? Now, I'm 7, but that guy's 16. Like I can see myself in 16. Like, wouldn't it be great if I had a ring to fly around? And I think there were so many obviously like different powers. Like, wait, that guy's on a superhero team because he's like smart? Like, I'm kind of a smart guy. Does that mean I could be a superhero, right? So there was that sort of like breadth of characters. My favorite Legionnaire is Wildfire. I think that's probably because I'm like frustrated a lot. Like, oh, so he was like good to see. Like, oh, he's kind of like ticked off at everybody, but he's still a hero, so that's good. And then I think once you start to get involved with it and you start to really know the lore and the mythology of it, then it just becomes like, oh, I'm sort of like one of the family. And then you get to the Great Darkness Saga era, and that's, as you say, is like clicking on all cylinders. Giffen has a very clean, almost like organic look to his art there that is perfect for the future, right? Like there's no corners in that world. Like everything is like beautiful in its own sort of way. Levitz had the whole like A plot, B plot, C plot. And then when A plot is done, B plot becomes A plot. And so there was constantly all of these subplots that were going along. Somehow Levitz is like the team is 40 members long, but it's you're always going to see them. There's always going to be something that's involved with it, right? So it's not like, why haven't I seen Karate Kid in 4 years, right? Now, everybody gets sort of like a little bit of a turn at bat somewhere along the way. So I think all of those things combined kind of made it. But, we're collectors if you're reading comics, and there's something like, I can collect so much Legion knowledge, right? Like that's also part of it, right? Like when I think about things like Siskoid, right? Siskoid probably could tell you the Legion Constitution like by heart, right? Like that's one of the things that Legion fans have. Like, well, of course in subsection A, they allowed Ultra Boy because his penetra vision is a different power, right?
Right,
So
yes.
it's that sort of stuff that I think got to me. It doesn't hurt that it's always beautiful art, like, oh, I'm
Sure.
8, and like, boy, Laurel Kent is barely wearing anything, right? So there's also like, so some of my first comic book crushes were Legionnaires, right? So I think it just it was just a wonderful avenue to sort of to get me involved in.
And we are very similar that my first sort of introduction, it may have been actually my first introduction may have been from Digest, a reprinted Adventure Comics series, so the early stuff, And so I read a lot of that, so the early adventures, and then of course the Shooter Mike Grell era, kind of like right around Superboy 200, where it was still called Superboy, I think, at that point, but it was starting to become, then it was turning into Superboy and Legion of Superheroes. And like you said, most of the women and some of the men were barely wearing any clothing. I mean, you're talking about the first crushes. Like, I'm probably the only guy I had a crush on Princess Projectra, and there is one that just, like, lives rent free in my head, where she is has to be like shocked alive, and there's a she's like lying on this table and everything. I'm like, oh my God. But her and the Saturn Girl's outfit, like you said, Laurel Kent, who who's never actually, I guess she was never actually a member, but she was in the academy and everything like that. So, but I love that run of Legion. It was so much fun. Now, obviously, early Legion, the biggest problem, even up through 5YL, was, this is supposed to be the future and almost everybody's white, which was, at the time you didn't really think about it. But yeah, it was a problem. And that's the one way, I mean, it's not really heralded as much of a run, but that 12 issue series that Bendis did with Ryan Sook, where the art is gorgeous, by the way. I enjoyed that for two reasons. One, Sook's art is phenomenal. And I didn't particularly like maybe all the character designs, but what I appreciated is he's like, okay, this is 1,000 years in the future. Not everybody is going to be a straight white guy, or something like that. The different races or mix of races and aliens and stuff like that was just so much more practical and cool and interesting. And he kind of started from scratch. So I think like Cosmic Boy was dating Shadowlass, which was kind of a big change, and everything like that. And so different things like that. So I appreciate it on that level. But yeah, the Grell run. And Grell, it's funny. I'm a huge Green Arrow fan. I don't particularly like his run on that. I think his art can at times be really sort of wonky, but for some reason it just really worked with the Legion. I mean, everybody's kind of standing there with their legs like 20 feet apart for some reason, but it didn't matter. It was so much fun, and the designs were cool. Dave Cockrum, I guess, actually designed a lot of the costumes, and Grell took them there, and he changed a few of them and stuff like that. And that belt, after Superboy left, it was a little hit or miss. The run where it's just Legion of Superheroes, kind of drifted for a while. A lot of the art's not particularly great. Joe Staton did a lot of that stuff, but it's not his best work. And they had some other people. They had Steve Ditko on there for a while.
Steve
Remember
Ditko
that?
did a
Remember
couple
that?
of them.
Yeah, it was like, what is this?
What
But
is this?
although there was one storyline where Ultra Boy joins up with some space pirates that I always liked. It's kind of dumb, but I always liked it, and I kind of had a crush on the pirate lady too. It was a lot of fun, and there were a lot of particular storylines that always stick around for you. The Great Darkness Saga is always the one they talk about. That's later in the Levitt's Giffen run. But there was a lot of this. Earth War was a lot of cool. It actually had my all-time favorite Legion artist, probably only did like 4 or 5 issues. That was James Sherman. And he did part of Earth War and everything like that. But I thought he kind of combined the Grell and almost a little bit of Neil Adams realism, but had sort of a slightly more rounded style, and he just had more dynamic poses and stuff like that. I thought it was like, wow, some of these issues were just amazing. And he'd have these shots of like this of like Mon-El like tearing through like three spaceships and coming right at you. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. It's so cool. I wish he had done more. I don't think he's a particularly fast artist, which I think was part of the problem. But man, his stuff was so good on there.
I'll just say, if you think about like the Baxter run, you start out with that battle against the Legion of Supervillains, Projectra kills Nemesis Kid, Karate Kid dies, you slide right into Steve Lytle. His work is just so detailed and absolutely stunning and beautiful. Like that Sensor Girl outfit design is just spot on. And then you talk about diversity. Like they were like, we need to make it more diverse. We'll add Tellus and Quizlet, right? So, still a lot of white guys, but
Yeah, well, sort of a yellow
and then a
water
big
guy monster,
fish, yeah.
fish guy, and then like a little energy being in a spaceship, I guess. So yeah, Wildfire got a much cooler costume than Quizlet did, didn't he? I mean, that could have been Wildfire could have been stuck in a little robot or a little thing. But yeah, they were kind of interesting characters and everything. So but yeah, Steve Lytle's art was incredible. I loved him. I wasn't as crazy with, I'm trying to remember who followed him. It was Greg LaRocque, LaRocque.
Greg LaRocque, yeah.
It was fine. It was just I don't think the inker who was with him,
Mike DiCarlo for most
it
of
just
it.
wasn't a good fit. I just think he and DiCarlo weren't a good fit. I feel like LaRocque was one of those guys who needed a really good inker, and DiCarlo's a very professional inker, but it just didn't work. The two of them just didn't work well together. I didn't think so. Is there any other aspect of we didn't mention with the 5YL Sunboy? What did you think of that whole run? Because again, talking about taking your characters in different ways, that was a basic character assassination of him. What did you think of that?
He's like, he is shown to be basically a womanizer in the Baxter run, right? He's like, anything that he can possibly sleep with, he will. And then you find out that he has become like the spokesperson. He knows the Dominators are running EarthGov, and he's become like a propaganda piece for them. And And we find out that like one of the ways that they help control him is that he leads this lavish lifestyle. He has this probably like the best word is like concubine who dresses like at one point she dresses up like Shadowlass. At one point she dresses up like, like other people as a way to kind of control him. And then ultimately you may remember that he like sees the error of his ways and like has a heroic moment, but dies doing it.
Basically self-immolates, doesn't he? I mean, he kind of
He
like
like
burns
set off
alive, so you're
yeah
like.
but I think if anybody was going to be that much of a a-hole, right, it was probably Sunboy. That's how they portrayed him in some sort of ways, right? Like the women were always like, come on, like again you're going to sleep with somebody, Sunboy, right? So I think I thought that that was actually a pretty good turn for him. But again, it was so good given broadened, like you saw, like at some point, I guess, like Polar Boy in the 5YL is like, we don't need the Earth Cup, we'll form our own Legion, and then that quickly disbands and things like that. So you kind of got like a sense of what happened to sort of everybody. I do think that one of the things that was good was that they really kept it to a core. There were like six or eight members that we followed all along. Other people sort of came in and out, but to sort of keep the mythology big, but yeah, we're really only following a few, which I think probably helped constrain things.
I think so. And I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you your thoughts on Laurel Gann, the obviously the kind of replacement for Supergirl.
I loved her. I love her. And there's an issue early in this run called like Laurel's story, where it really takes so much of Supergirl's Silver Age stories and twists. So if you go again to that super blogger site and look at that one, I think I have like panel by panel, like this is what it looked like in Action Comics in the early 1960s with Jim Mooney, and here's how they did that. So they really embraced the fact that she was like a replacement for Supergirl in a lot of her origin. She was always in like, she had on a jacket, but it was always this like super high up, like aerobics outfit thong, right?
Very cheeky, she was.
Very, very cheeky. But I thought that she was absolutely great. She was like the muscle of the team, in many, many ways. And I thought that was cool. And she had a relationship with Brainiac 5. They really sort of played up that. So I was thrilled
Yeah, and they could
when she
finally sort of build on that because she wasn't from a different century, too. You know, I mean, she was
Yes.
there, she wasn't going anywhere. So it was like you
Correct.
could kind of like, embrace it a little bit more.
Yeah.
No, it's all right. You talked me off the ledge a little bit, Angela. This is good. I kind of needed this for the 5YL. Still my favorite, but it's grown on me. Kind of revisiting all this again
Yeah.
is sort of grown on me a little bit. Is there anything else you want to say about this particular issue or the 5YL in general or anything else?
They have omnibuses of it now. So I think that somehow it has like become recognized as something that should at least be, collected for the people that really, really love it. Like I said from the very beginning, it's polarizing. And so it's not for everybody. And if it's not for you, that's fine, right? Like, I think that makes perfect sense. But I just love it. And I was so thrilled when I was like, can we do number 12? Right. So I thank you for letting me talk about this
Of
issue because,
course.
again, every time I read it, goosebumps.
We had talked about we were going to do a particular Legion character, and but you love this issue so much. I'm like, there's I mean, I guess maybe you could say Element Lab, but there's not like really a spotlight on one particular character. It's more an ensemble issue. So I was like, well, it just makes sense. Let's just do the Legion, instead of,
Yeah.
so next time we'll do Lightning Lass or somebody like that.
Yeah,
We could
yeah,
focus more on somebody like that. So, well, Ange, it's last call. And this is a segment where I ask my insightful guest, Dr. Ange, some thought-provoking questions that came to me as I prepare for this show. I asked a question. Ange fascinates us all with his answers. As always, I gave Ange two of these questions in advance, and then there is a mystery fantastic question. So I am going to do one thing a little differently here. The mystery fantastic question, I'm actually going to do second instead of last because it's still sort of Legion related, and then we'll go to our last one, which Martin Gray will enjoy a lot. So, all right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, fantastic question number one. Taking the 31st century heroes from any incarnation or era, What is your 10-member Legion team?
I decided I was just going to pick my favorite characters.
That's fine. That's
So it
fine.
might not
Yeah.
make sense, but Wildfire, because he's my favorite character. Lightning Lass, because she's my second favorite character. Shrinking Violet, because she's my third favorite character. And then to round it out, all favorites of mine, Chameleon Boy, Cosmic Boy, Saturn Girl, White Witch, Brainiac 5, Laurel Gand, not Supergirl, and Phantom Girl. Now it's going to be like, how can you have Phantom Girl and not Ultra Boy? I'm sorry, right? But I think that's the team. I love the Ayla Vi relationship. I love the Brainy Laurel Gand relationship. You need Rock and Saturn Girl. I always found Lightning Lad to be a little bit of a whiner. And I've got Lightning Lass for my powers, for the lightning power. So that's my team.
Okay. Is there now, you said Wildfire is your favorite. Is that
Yeah.
correct? Is there a particular time and place of Wildfire that you like? Did you
Yeah.
like it when he was leader at one point? He was
He
actually, for
was
as much of a
leader at
hothead, he
one
was
point.
leader.
But I think I like him best in sort of the Great Darkness era, early Baxter. He's like training the kids. He's pining for Dawnstar. He's trying to be friends with people. Giffen drew this, like the way that he drew the outfit was like the helmet was almost like a shawl. So like there were times he was flying where like you would see like the red shoulders like sort of come up almost like a mini cape. And he had this like great, it was like super strength, but also blasts, which I thought was cool. But part of it was like, man, he loves Dawnstar and he can never touch her. That's like, and I'm like, and I'm a nerd and no one will ever love me. So there was a little bit of that there too.
A little bit of that like Gambit Rogue thing going on where they
Yes.
can't touch. But now what about the Lightning Lass and Shrinking Violet? You mentioned you kind of like their relationship, and that's another bold thing that the Legion did. This was
For
sort of
sure.
first lesbian relationship, or one of the first ones that was ever, depicted like out loud, more or less. You
Yeah.
know, I mean, there have been times in the Legion history where things have been implied with certain characters, but
Yeah.
they kind of spell this out. So, is there a particular time and place that you like either of these or both of them or anything
Yeah,
like that?
you know, that relationship like really comes to fruition in the Baxter series when LaRocque is drawing. And both are kind of coming out a little out of like coming to maybe that realization out of some sort of trauma in their life. You might remember that Lightning Lass at one point when she was like Light Lass was like, I'm quitting the Legion and Timberwolf, you got to come with me. And Timberwolf was like, I can't, the Legion is my family. So she like leaves. And then of course, Shrinking Violet gets like put in a sensory deprivation tank and replaced by a Adirlin for a while. And right. And then they both come back to the Legion, right? They're both out and then they both come back. And they're like, you know, we're just different. Our lives are so very different because of all of this other stuff that we've sort of gone through. And they just sort of find each other. And it just seemed like, as you say, like at the time, it was just great to see that on the page, you know. And to see that they really cared about each other. So I thought that was cool. So sort of like back half of the Baxter series.
And obviously, like when they're on Wyneth, when they're out working the farm, there's no dress code either, because
There's
they
no
basically,
dress
for
code.
those who
Buck naked.
don't know, they basically everybody just walks around topless.
Yeah.
So men or women, which there's a point when we were talking earlier about this happens later in the series, but when we talk about how Garth was replaced by this Protea character, his sister Lightning Lass overhears a conversation he's having with other Protea people. And she kind of confronts him, and she's like, I guess she's not upset, but she's like, I guess I always knew. But she has no top on. So he's in there having this conversation, sitting on the dock with his naked sister. And it's just like, what is happening here?
What is
He's
happening?
dressed like a Victorian dandy, and she's like
Yeah.
in a loincloth and nothing else. So it's just really bizarre. Well, what about like Chameleon Boy? Where is there a time
Yeah.
and place for him?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I really liked about him is that there was that sub thing, the espionage squad. And I
Yes.
just always thought it was so cool. And he had, like, I don't have to tell anybody what I'm doing. That's the purpose of the espionage squad. So I thought that that was really cool. You know, we find out that he's like the son of RJ Brand. He kind of has to grow through some trials of his own. But I just always thought he was pretty cool. Like the shape-changing power, I think, is just pretty slick.
Yeah, and you're right. He kind of had a conniving side to him. The espionage squad, it was like usually him and Shrinking Violet, Invisible Kid, whichever one at the
Invisible
time,
Kid, Phantom
and
Girl.
Phantom Girl. Yes, and was that pretty
Yeah.
much that was the main four, right?
I think
Occasionally
that's the main four.
they'd
Yeah.
use other people, but those were the ones who are the most incognito
Yeah.
powers. He was the one who, speaking of lightning lads, he was the one who kind of screwed up that whole mission where they got trapped on like an ice moon or like a cold
Yes.
moon or something like that, where Timberwolf's about to make out with Saturn Girl, and then
Yes.
Ayla sees that, and then so all the Levitts and melodrama. It's great. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
So obviously our fearless leader, Rock Korean Cosmic Boy, what's your favorite, like, is there a particular time or
Yeah.
place? Is this it? 5YL?
I think 5YL, the way he just shows that he's like really the heart of the team.
Yeah.
And like, I have no powers, but you're going to listen to me. I'm going to lead you. So
Yep.
I think that's great.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And Saturn Girl?
Okay, Saturn Girl, I'll say, you know, she had left the Legion early in the Baxter series and comes back, and really at that point is like a force. And so you think about her in something like the Universal Project, where she basically saves the universe. So I'd say Baxter series for her.
White Witch?
Yeah, you know, I like her. I like the relationship she has with Block,
Yeah.
which I think is very sweet. And I think you always kind of need a magic character on your team. And I would say pre-Baxter series, kind of in that she gets brought onto the team in the Great Darkness Saga because they go to the Sorcerer's World and they're like, we're going to sort of need you. And I think that early part of her story where she's like exposed to stuff that she's like, this is all very new to me. I'm like not used to what I'm seeing. I think was a very good story for her.
She's far more interesting than her sister. I just like
Yes.
Dream Girl is one of those characters
Yeah.
I could just never, she just never got. And she wasn't treated very well in the 5YL later. They just
No,
kind of made
not at
her,
all.
they just made her this little, kind of overweight, lush,
Yeah.
that was sort of partying away. That was kind of like her whole thing. Okay, Brainiac 5.
Yeah, so Brainiac 5 and Laurel Gand are sort of like together. I'm always fascinated by Brainy. He's gone nuts like four times and almost destroyed everything about four times, right? But I think probably in the pre-Baxter Levitz stuff is sort of where I like him the best.
Gotcha. Phantom Girl.
Phantom Girl, I mean, boy, those pigtails, and she's just got big circles cut out like of her uniform in different spots. But I think that I would say, again, probably Baxter series, kind of like I would say the middle of the Baxter series, when it was very clear that it was like her and Shadow Lass were best friends. They were hanging out with Mon-El and Ultra Boy all the time.
They were sort of like the power couples, it
Yeah.
was. In fact, I'm trying to. What did Shadow was Shadow last? She was in the 5YL. What? Somewhere, wasn't she? She's
Yeah,
not really.
not a lot, I don't think.
No. Yeah,
Not a
she's not
lot.
really in much of it. That's interesting. Yeah. Oh well. All right. Well, yeah, I like that. So I couldn't help but, since I asked this question, I'm just going to go real quick. Ultra Boy, Timberwolf, Phantom Girl, Princess Projector. I'm the only person who probably have him on the list, but Karate Kid. I always like Karate Kid. Jim Shooter's smile somewhere up there smiling right now. Cosmic Boy as Rocket. I will say, this is my favorite rendition of Cosmic Boy is the
Yeah.
5YL. So that's the one thing. We kind of have some similar Saturn Girl, Brainiac 5, then Dawnstar, who I
Nice.
always like. I always just thought she visually was so cool, the beautiful and the wings, and I kind of liked that she was really like a tracker. I always thought that was kind of a cool
Yeah.
power she had. And then actually Duo Damsel. I always liked Duo
Oh.
Damsel. But yeah, I always thought she was pretty cool. All right, so now I'm going to go to the mystery question, and then I'm going to go back to the second fantastic question. So
Sure.
here's the mystery fantastic question. These are basically some rapid fire favorites. So just, whatever comes to mind first. All right, you ready?
I'm ready.
Favorite Legion writer.
Probably Giffen beer bombs as a team.
Okay. Legion artist.
Legion artist favorite, Steve Lytle.
Okay. Legion villain.
The Fatal Five as a group, and if I can't do them as a group, I would say Emerald Empress.
Okay. Yeah, you can do them as a group, but yeah, Emerald Emperor is a great choice. Do you like the Legion with or without Superboy?
I actually like them without Superboy.
Do you like the Legion with or without Supergirl?
I like a Supergirl analog of some sort. So if not Kara, then Laurel is fine.
Very good. Favorite Legion of substitute heroes?
Favorite Legion of substitute hero? Well, Fire Lad becomes pretty awesome in 5YL, where he
True.
becomes like this huge like rebel leader. But I was always partial to Stone Boy for some reason. It's just such a
Yes.
stupid power that I think is great. And I don't count Polar Boy in that group because eventually he gets up to the
Yeah.
big leagues.
Favorite supporting character?
Eren Shvaan or Shvaan Eren.
Siobhan Aaron. Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Least favorite Legionnaire.
Least favorite Legionnaire, Chemical King, because it's just so hard to sort of understand what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, that
So.
was true. I think that's why they killed him. He had like five appearances and they killed him because they were like, oh, we don't know what he does. Is he Element Lad? What's the same thing? What's happening here? Is he making salt? What's he doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your best underrated Legion run?
It isn't mentioned a lot, but there is the conspiracy run in the Baxter series where the people that are so ticked off that Superboy got killed by Time Trapper, they're going to go kill the Time Trapper. And it is such a
Yes.
messed up group. It's like Duo Damsel, Brainiac Five. I forget who else is on there.
Saturn Girl is on it.
Saturn Girl,
Mon-El.
right?
Yeah.
And Mon-El, and then they're going to be like, and what we're going to do is we're going to unleash, I think, the Infinite Man
Yes.
to
Yes.
kill
That's
the Time
right.
Trapper. And the cool thing about it is that it's people are like, there's a conspiracy happening. Something bad is happening in the background. And we have to try to figure it out. And so you don't see deception like that within the ranks that often. And so I'm surprised that isn't mentioned more. I would say the Who is Center Girl story, but I think that's pretty well. I think that's rated. So I
Yeah,
don't think that's under.
that was a big deal. I love your choice, and that was good. And on top of that, two of the characters were married. Duo Damsel and Saturn Girl were both married, and they didn't tell their husbands. The fact basically, Duo Damsel was only there because she was in love with
Correct.
which get, a bouncing boy of all characters had to have the biggest imposter syndrome ever. And then the fact that she's in love with like this icon from
Yeah.
their greatest member couldn't have helped things either for his self-esteem. So I felt a little bad for him, but no, and they basically get their asses kicked, the whole time. Like Mon-El gets wiped out. Duo Damsel, I think her other her one of them dies, right? So it's
Other self gets
just
killed.
Damsel at that point. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was a tough run for them. It wasn't a good idea. All right, very good. So, final fantastic question. What
Yeah.
is your personal Boston sports top five? Now, again, these are not who experts would choose as like the greatest Boston sports athletes or anything like that, or like a Mount Rushmore, but your favorite athletes.
Yeah. And so what I'll say is that I'm a big fan, and I think a lot of Boston fans are this way. Like, we like the blue collar, lunch pail, show up and do the work, not a superstar, not glitzy, not driving Porsches and like seen with starlets. And so, and some of those people are megastars and some of them aren't. So I would
I was
say,
going to say one of the
we'll
I
get
have
there.
your list here. One of
We'll
them.
get there.
Okay, all right,
So
go ahead.
I'll say Cedric Maxwell, who like on a team with Larry Bird and Robert Parrish and Kevin McHale was like the sixth man and was just a grinded out kind of a guy, so I just always
And
loved him. He was like
did you tell everybody his nickname? Can you tell everybody his nickname?
Cornbread.
Cornbread Maxwell. That's right.
Cornbread
That's great.
Maxwell.
Yeah. Do you have
So
any idea? Do you know why he was called that?
I
I
don't
don't
know
know.
why he was
I
called
don't know
Cornbread,
either. I don't know.
but I thought that he was great because he was just like knew his role, was going to work really hard, was surrounded by superstars, was great on his own. For the Bruins, I picked Ray Bourque because I think he was often surrounded by no talent, but always raised his game and obviously was like so Excellent, right? So he was great.
And then
From
eventually left. He finally they like traded him
they
like right towards
traded
the end
him.
of his career, and he got a Stanley Cup with the, was it the Avalanche?
The Avalanche. Yeah.
Was the Avalanche, yeah.
They were like, we'll let you get your Stanley Cup. We'll
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
trade you. But and there was a great moment. He was number seven, and then they retired Phil Esposito's number seven. And there's this great moment where like he takes the number seven shirt off and he's got the 77 underneath because he was 77. So like honoring the history of the Bruins. So
Yeah.
yeah. I'm a big Red Sox guy, so I have two Red Sox people. The first I'll go Dustin Pedroia, just a scrappy, like, he's like Rudy, right? You're like 5 foot nothing, 100 and nothing, but was like the heart of that team. Won the MVP 1 year as like as from
Did
second
he?
base.
I didn't remember that. Wow. Okay.
I think two World Series for them. Was really, really a gutty kind of a player, which I absolutely love. Think it, his career was cut short. Manny Machado slid high and injured his knee, and he sort of never came back.
Yeah, I was going
But
to say he only played for about 7 years or
he
so,
only
didn't he?
played for about 7 years. But I think he won two World Series, was an MVP, was just like one of those guys that was like, I'm going to come here. I'm just going to be as hard as nails. My uniform is always covered in dirt at the end of the game. If you told me to sell hot dogs in the stand, I'd do it, Skip. Like he's one of those guys. So love him. And similarly, Tim Wakefield. Is probably my all-around favorite Red Sox player because he, first of all, it's like a knuckleball pitcher. What's not to love about a knuckleball pitcher? But he pitched, for them forever. Do you know he closed 1 year? Do you know that he was their closer 1 year?
Oh, I didn't know
Yes,
that.
yeah. Their closer like blew out his arm, and they were like, why not have me close, Skip? So he like so I think that year he had something like 12 wins and 18 saves, right? And can
Really?
you
Wow.
imagine, like, if you're like ninth inning, I'm like ready to face a 100 mile an hour heat, and I'm getting like a 44 mile an hour flutter, right? Like, so but he was one of those guys, in the we talked about the 2004 Red Sox. Remember, they were down 3-0 against the Yankees. He was supposed to pitch game four, but he said, put me out in game three and I'll just pitch the rest of the game. I'll get shellacked. Who cares? This way, the rest of the bullpen is rested so that we can try to sort of win the rest. So he was like that kind of selfless guy. So I just absolutely loved Tim Wakefield. He just had that attitude. He was one of those guys, like, again, Fenway Park is 3 blocks away from Boston Children's Hospital and Dana-Farber. He visited the Dana-Farber Children's Cancer Unit, like, so many times, just like this big-hearted guy, like love him forever.
Did he even play for anybody else?
He played for Pittsburgh. He played a
Did
very
he?
short time for Pittsburgh,
Is that who
and then
drafted him?
that's who drafted him.
Oh, okay.
And
All right. So he was
they
there at the beginning
drafted
of it.
him as an outfielder,
Really?
and they were like, dude, you're a banjo hitter. We thought you'd hit well. And he was like, I can throw a knuckleball, and they were like, show us. And so he played for the Pirates for a while.
Wow,
Yeah,
I didn't even
I think
realize
it's that.
that. Yeah, I couldn't think of any other team he had played for, but okay, the beginning. Yeah. All
Yeah.
right.
And
Yeah.
then the last one, and you're going to be like, this goes against everything that you talked about before, but I got to put Tom Brady up there. And you almost have to break up Brady's career into phases, right? Because it's like, yes, there is the guy that married Gisele Bündchen and eats avocado ice cream and clearly has had his face sculpted and that sort of, and that's that guy. But, he was the guy. He was drafted 199th, right? He was in like a like, and there's the story that he went up to Bob Kraft and said, "I'm the best choice you ever made was drafting me." And Bob Kraft is like, "Who's this kid?" Right? And they would say stories that he would stay late and practice and like told Troy Brown like, "Hey, everybody else is leaving. You want to go run some routes so that we can understand what's going on?" And just really worked very hard to hone his game. And they said he was the first guy in the parking lot every morning. He was the last guy that left. He was the guy that was like, I'm going to the film room again. So he really had that sort of dedication that I think, they talk about the Patriots way. It's not cheating. The Patriots way is
say a word. I didn't say a word.
The Patriots way is do your job, but more importantly, do your job well, is what Belichick would say. And so it's just hard not to love him, right? Like,
sure. Oh, God,
you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, like, has won a million Super Bowls for you.
Yes,
right?
yeah,
so,
yeah.
So can't knock success.
I was going to say, the guy won six Super Bowls for you. You can't, you know.
Can't knock success.
You take him away, there's zero. So if you have,
yes.
if he got you six, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, no. it wouldn't be a podcast with you, Andrew, but we didn't talk some sports. Come on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that does it. It's closing time, man. So, you know, listen, I was so happy to have you back in the lounge. Thank you so much for doing this. I was so excited to talk Legion. We've done the 5YL. Maybe we'll do like the Grell Legion or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
The Shooter Grell years or something like that. So next time. But where can listeners find you? Where are you not at this point? Maybe that's better. Better way of
no.
asking.
I'm at Dr. Ange 70 on X and Blue Sky. I run my Supergirl blog called Comic Box Commentary, but you can just type in Supergirl blog and I'm at the top. You can go back in time and read my stuff on Legion of Super Bloggers, where I covered 5YL, the three boot, and other sort of eras throughout there.
I highly recommend that, especially if you're not sure exactly what Keith Giffen was drawing in a particular issue. Go read Ange's blog. He explains it all. So it's good stuff.
I tell people, I've been writing about Supergirl for now 17 years. I consider that 5YL review run the high watermark of my comic writing. So
are you going to be on any of the shows, any of the network shows or anything else anytime soon?
Yeah, I'm going to be on MASHcast twice this season, so I'm always happy to be on MASHcast. I do believe the Supergirl movie is coming out this summer, so I think I'm scheduled to be on the DC special cast at some point. And I am currently doing V for Vendetta with Billy D on his podcast feed, and that's a real super deep dive into that book. So if you like that book, that's a good place to find me.
Well, real quick, I guess since I have you, what are you excited about the Supergirl movie? I haven't had a chance to really ask you about that.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Tom King run, which it's based on. I think he Tom Kinged her in many ways. But I do think that James Gunn will probably realize that he has to make her more inspirational. So I've always said I think the addition of Lobo, who is not in the comic book, is a big deal. Because I think the way that I think it's going to play out is she's going to say, like, man, if I stay on the bad road that I'm on, I'm going to end up like Lobo, and I don't want to end up like Lobo. So he's like a dark mirror, and I'm going to like veer and become more like a cousin.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to it. I mean, not to.
Thanks again, and we'll be right back.
Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. Slide up to the bar alongside Ryan Daly and a rotating cast of guest hosts as they celebrate the long-running, award-winning television series, one hilarious episode at a time. New episodes of Cheerscast drop every Thursday, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
And we're back. If you like what you heard, support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcast. There you can unlock various rewards, including being name checked on the show of your choice. Thanks to Sean Ross and Jay Campbell for choosing the Fantastic Four. Little known fact, both Sean and Jay were in the Legion of Substitute Heroes back in the future day. Sean was called Too Tired Boy, and Jay went by Can't Find My Keys Lad. If you choose the Fantastic Four, I will throw flash grenades with you in a vacant mall. Or at least find some fun way to mention you on every episode. Now, here's the feedback from episode 17 with the Irredeemable Shag featuring Tim Drake and an Amaretto Mai Tai. FW Godfather and host of Fade Out, Rob Kelly says, great episode, Brett. And Shag was also there. I don't have anything to say about Robin other than I helped smoke Jason Todd. Let that be a lesson to all of you. I agree with Shag. Florida's beaches on the Gulf of Mexico side are stunning. We spend every weekend there.
Yes, having it be 106 in July and August, it's rough, but I'm willing to make that trade to never see snow again in my lifetime. And yes, we do have Dragon Con and Michael Bailey to inadvertently being the start of the network. I remember listening to the episode with Michael Bailey and Shag discussing who's who and thinking, this might be a thing. And here we are. Love the show as always. Thanks, Rob. FW All-Star, host of Peacebound and Down, the Wonder Woman podcast, and Fantastic Lounge regular Sean Ross says, great episode, guys. I can't believe you assumed that I wouldn't know who Babe Ruth was. Okay, so this is Brett. Sean, I was talking about Sean Myers, not you. So it's that's why that might make more sense that way. I know you know a little bit about sports. She was the woman who signed the baseball that goes over the fence in the sandlot. Everyone knows that. Okay, I retract everything I just said, Sean. Shag is correct. For once, that Tim Drake is the best Robin. While the recent Joshua Williamson written Robin and Batman and Robin series have redeemed Damian for me, no one comes close to Tim. The key to jumpstart Tim again is all about giving him the right code name. My vote is Redbird. Super Captain chimed in to reply to Sean. Almost anything would be better than Drake. If you're going to have a secret identity, maybe don't go with your real last name. Good point. The guest of this very episode of Fantastic Lounge regular Dr. Ange says, great episode and great drink. Amaretto is another favorite of mine. My grandmother used to drizzle it on her ice cream. I have never been a huge Batman family guy. Looking at my collection outside of set pieces like Year One, Year Two, Lonely Place of Dying, the only long runs I have are Grant Morrison stuff. So this was fun to listen to, especially just hearing the 90s Bat stuff. I am a huge fan of Grummet, mostly for his work on the Connor Kent Metropolis Kid stuff back in the Reign of Superman and beyond. So good. His Matrix Supergirl was superb. Regarding this issue, I won't kill mantra might have been put to the test when you see just how big the cybernetic eye mechanism is. Looks like he might have been debrained the guy ripping the stuff out. I agree. Even if that didn't kill the guy, you know that there's a big asshole leading directly to the old brain pan. Not a good thing to be walking around with. On to the questions. Question one, teammates. Dick Grayson, I love to team him up with a new mentor, someone who's also a sidekick in the Golden Age. Maybe you resurrect Wing from the Crimson Avenger. Jason Todd, give the anger he feels. I'd love to see him team up with Saint Walker, the Blue Lantern powered by Hope. Maybe there's an arc where the Red Lanterns are thinking of recruiting the Red Hood and Walker has to step in. Tim Drake, I feel like he has gone soft in recent years, so he needs someone to get his blood pumping again. If I can cross universes, a 12-issue maxi series teaming him with the Laura Kinney Wolverine would be awesome. She'd be all brawler, he'd be the thinker. They each adapt a little bit of the other. Definitely some romantic sparks. That'd be a cool crossover. Steph Brown, I will admit that Steph is my favorite Batgirl, that run just being incredible. She was also so fun in the book, so maybe teaming her up with someone with a little more grit and ire would be fun. So Ravager. Damian, he is trying to figure out who he is. He is living in the enormous shadow of not only his father, but also all the other Robins. He might have some anger issues he is trying to control. He needs a mentor outside of the Batman family, so Supergirl. She is also living in the shadow of Superman. There are a million Superboys she is vying with, including John Kent, and she's still trying to figure out who she is, but it's further along. A Supergirl Damian book would be rich. I like that too. Carrie, she is from the dystopian future. She needs to be teamed with someone from a utopian future. It has to be a Legionnaire, but which one? I lean into my 5YL love. No kidding, Ange. I'd say Bounty Hunter and Tracker Bounty, formerly Dawnstar. Too niche, maybe Timberwolf. Question two, poach supervillains for Tim Drake. Savant, Golden Glider, Mad Hatter, Terror Man, and Hector Hammond. I like the idea of Street Fighters for him, but a hot skater, a cowboy, a literature nut, and a psionic villain would give creators a broader palette. Love the episode. Sincerely, guest from episode 4 and now episode 18. Ange, thanks. Super Captain jumped in to say, I think that I have about 90% of this volume of Robin and definitely have all the Chuck Dixon issues. He knew what he was doing in the 1990s, mostly self-contained stories of 1 to 3 issues with an interesting supporting cast who provide a few subplots. Robin, Nightwing, and Birds of Prey were books that brought me back to the DC Universe after a few years away. Tom Grummet is always a delight whenever he's on Robin, Superboy, Superman, or Generation X over at Marvel. I did a double take when Shag said that his favorite doctor was Dr. Midnight. In an alternate reality, his network would probably be called Fate and Water. I may have mentioned elsewhere my favorite story about Doctor Who fandom. Sylvester McCoy, the Seventh Doctor, once met a fan whose arm was in a cast, so he offered to sign the cast. Fan was really excited and told him, I can't believe this. This is incredible. I can't believe that I met my fifth favorite doctor. Excellent job, Brett and Shaq. Thank you. Gothos Mansion stops in to say, having gone through two versions of Jason Todd and Carrie Kelly, I thought, another Robin again? Really? At the time Tim Drake was introduced, unfortunately around that time I had to give up comics because of college expenses. I did go back later and pick up the Detective and Batman issues, and I missed and enjoyed Chuck Dixon's Detective run with Tim as Robin. But I still haven't picked up any of the Robin solo series. If you're wondering, when I started collecting at the mature age of 5, Dick Grayson was still the one and only Robin. Did you know he now has been Nightwing 42 years for almost as long as he was Robin 45 years? Jeez, great way to make me feel old. By the way, I hate, loathe, despise Damian. Bucky749 says, here's my fantastic question. Since the poor is all ages hangout, I'm not sure it is, Bucky. We just let you in sometimes to play pinball. What do you think Tim Drake, Dick Grayson, and Batgirl would order food-wise? I remember you mentioning fish tacos once. That's a good question. You know, it would probably be something disgustingly healthy since these people are all the pinnacle of fitness. Nate DeGreat says, I like Tim, but he seems to be the Robin that has been somewhat forgotten by DC, even though he has that cool black and yellow cape. I mean, Dick is the original, and Damian is Batman's son with extra attitude, so Tim's kind of stuck. Maybe the Crimson Raven would work for a new name. I like the idea of Golden Glider and Terror Man for new villains, but add Captain Boomerang and maybe Gentleman Ghost. Nice. FW All-Star, host of DC Special Cast and Fantastic Lounge regular, Paul Kien says, Brett, congratulations on your 17th best episode. So I guess I will have to have Shag on DCSC now. Love Tim Drake. Unlike Mr. Irredeemable, I have never grown out of my Batman phase. And in the 90s, I was all in on the Batman family of titles. You mentioned the Dixon ones like Robin, Nightwing, and Birds of Prey is the best, and it's hard to argue with that. The best doctor, of course, is Dr. Doom. Dr. Midnight doesn't even come 17th. Team-ups. Nightwing and the Birds of Prey. Could you imagine a title with him and all his exes? Could get Batgirl, Starfire, Huntress, and that Pirate Girl. Maybe even Tarantula. Throw in Lori Elton. There you go, Paul. As the woman in the chair, and you've got the bestseller. Love it. Red Hood and I Don't Care. Damian and John Kent is a no-brainer as 13, 14-year-olds. Throw in Tim Drake and Connor Kent, and you've got a whole team. Carrie Kelly and Rob Kelly. Catgirl and Robadoodle. The Who's Who entry just writes itself. Anyway, great job this episode putting it up with his nonsense. Paul just coming in hot. Love it. John Stibe says, another fun episode, guys. Even if I can't shake the image of Shag's feet from my mind, neither can I, John. The Drake sounds good, and the comic sounds even better. I always say that Tim Drake is my favorite Robin because of the era of the Bat titles. Don't get me wrong. I love Dick Grayson. Dick Grayson is one of my all-time favorite comic book characters, regardless of when he's the Boy Wonder, Substitute Batman, or most important to me, Nightwing. But how can you not root for Tim Drake in this comic? A hero who wants to be a hero because it's the right thing to do. And Tim proved in this issue by standing up to KG Beast and continuing to fight to save Bullock against increasingly unsurmountable odds. That's Peter Parker level commitment there. Thanks for reminding me of how good this series was. Cheers. And finally, Martin Gray says, thanks for another fun listen, Brett, but I hope non-alcoholic drinks aren't really off the agenda. I'm allergic to alcohol. It's not my fault. So, Martin, this is Brett. I wanted just to jump in here. Absolutely, there will be more non-alcoholic drinks featured in future episodes. In fact, I have one planned for this summer. Also, always check the show episode gallery, as I've always included a mocktail version of the featured cocktail recipe whenever feasible. In a lot of cases, I'd say well over half of the episodes, I have provided a mocktail version of whatever drink we're making. So please check those as well. All are welcome to the Fantastic Lounge. I want to emphasize that, Martin, obviously you and anyone else who is not a drinker, I hope you get enough out of the show beyond the recipes to really enjoy it. We will have more mocktail episodes, and I always provide a mocktail recipe whenever it makes sense to. Back to Martin. I loved Tim Drake and the art of Tom Grummett, but I don't read many issues of this series because Chuck Dixon's villains are so boring. They're all kung fu ninjas and brutes. Also, Denny O'Neill's period editing, then Batbook saw me drop them all. Oof. I applaud Shag's idea to have Sportsmaster be Tim's gym coach, just so long as we get short shorts on the villain. Thank you, Martin. All right. Well, listen, thank you to all who listen. Be sure to subscribe to the Fantastic Four, available on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. And of course, please leave a 5-star review. The Fantastic Four is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. You can find all episodes of the Fantastic Four and many other quality shows at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Please leave comments on the website. Let me know what you think of the show, and I read all feedback at the end of every episode. Follow us on Facebook at FW Podcast Network, Blue Sky at FW Podcasts, Instagram at Fire and Water Podcast, and use our hashtag online, hashtag FW Podcasts. I can be found on Instagram and Blue Sky at Imaginate Design. Thanks again to Dr. Ange for hanging out in the Fantastic Lounge. Until next time, the bar is open.